one. We're going to be taking item number one first. Item number one is discussion regarding third-party delivery fees for restaurants during pandemic update. And Commissioner Gongora, this is your item.
Yes, thank you, Chair. As you know, I've been working on trying to obtain assistance for our small restaurants that have been incurring very high delivery charges during the pandemic, as well as discounts for our residents. One of the things that the commission approved that we are doing presently is a $60,000 fund to reimburse small businesses and restaurants. And I would ask at the end if we could get an update on where that is at. This is the companion piece of that proposal, which is we reached out to Uber Eats. I've been working on this for a couple of months with Raquel and with Alec Boschner. We've had a few phone conferences with Uber Eats that finally resulted in a proposal from them in a letter that's in the agenda dated January 13th, 2021, where they are looking to make some concessions for our residents, restaurants, et cetera, and to work with us. I've continued to work on this item with Raquel and Alec, and I think the deal has gotten a little bit better since this letter. I'm going to let Raquel present that because she's the point person on the item and what the changes are and what this means for us, for Miami Beach, and for our restaurants. And I also believe that there are some small restaurants, Stephanie from Cheeseburger Baby, that wanted to be heard, and I'm sure she's zoomed into the meeting somewhere. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Raquel.
Good morning, Raquel. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Thank you, Commissioner Gongora, for teeing it up for me. Uber has agreed, since this agenda was published, to enhance the partnership that they're offering by adding two additional weeks for the marketing campaign for Miami Beach residents. There would now be 6 weeks of a fee waiver and promotional discounts for participating eaters in Miami Beach, and the city may combine the 6 weeks and choose which dates the campaign will run for. So instead of that proposed period of March 1st through March 15th and May 1st through May 15th, we can select which weeks we want to utilize the promotional discounts for. Additionally, Uber Eats has agreed to extend the campaign period for Miami Beach restaurants from March 31st to May 31st. This includes a waiver of marketplace fees for pickup orders and credit card processing fees, and also includes reimbursement of delivery fees for restaurants using their own delivery personnel. Uber no longer seeks city participation in the form of traditional paid advertising, such as billboards. Rather, the city will utilize our social media platform and email database to share the information with residents and businesses. We will also work together on a joint press release to build awareness of the partnership. And I believe the Uber representatives are also on the call if there are any questions regarding the potential partnership.
Thank you, Raquel. I will open it up. But before I do, does anybody else want to speak from the virtual dais before I open it up? Seeing no hands, I will open it up. Our first, and by the way, if anybody would like to participate on this particular item, you have to press star 9 on your phone or raise the hand icon on the Zoom. Okay, our first speaker, and you have 2 minutes, Javi Corioso. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Javi Corioso with Uber Eats. Just wanted to thank Commissioner Gongora and the city's Economic Development Department, Raquel, who very eloquently just laid out the parameters of the proposal to work together to really help drive additional demand to the Miami Beach restaurant community. Uber Eats supports efforts to help the hospitality industry, which is why we've been working very closely with the city to come up with a proposal that we think is really going to drive the bottom line for these restaurants in a positive way, which is by doing two things, as Raquel mentioned. Number one, waiving the marketplace fees associated with certain ways in which restaurants work with our platform, including pickup orders and all orders in which a restaurant uses their own worker to fulfill that delivery. We will waive all of the fees associated with those orders through May 31st. And then on the Miami Beach resident side, really incentivizing them to support local small businesses. So for that 6 week time period, which will be decided hopefully here in the coming days, Miami Beach residents will have no delivery fee on any order that they request from a local Miami Beach small business restaurant. I'm happy to answer any questions that commissioners may have. And again, very appreciative of the work of the commissioner and the Economic Development Department to really partner up to help drive additional demand to the restaurant industry in the city.
Thank you so much, Javi.
Can I interject a question to Javi?
Of course, Commissioner.
Thank you. Javi, I appreciate your willingness to work with the city and with me and our department on this. And I think that we have made progress, and I appreciate Uber Eats doing something, because that's what we're always trying to do, provide something for our residents and small businesses. The one thing that's light, because I do see the discount for the residents, and I do see the encouragement for new restaurants to get involved and pick up orders, and I'm happy to join in the partnership. But one of the things that's not there, that's kind of like all on the city side, is discounts for deliveries for existing restaurants. Is there something that we can add to this proposal to help them a little bit more and sweeten up the deal?
Existing restaurants that are already on the platform?
Correct. Because what I see in here is there's discounts for residents, there's discounts for new restaurants that join, and there's discounts for pickup. But I don't really see anything with regard to the delivery fees for existing restaurants. And I was just wondering if there's something we can offer them, because that's really what started the conversation in the first place. I'm happy with the direction it's taking, but I wanted to see if there's something at least that we could do to provide them some relief as well.
Yeah, that's a great question, Commissioner. So if you are an existing restaurant that already is on the Uber Eats platform, Uber Eats is removing the marketplace fees associated with three types of deliveries. Number one, all pickup orders. So, you know, if a Miami Beach resident uses the app to request the order, the app processes it, but then that resident goes directly to the restaurant and picks it up. There'll be no fees associated with the processing of those orders. Uber Eats will cover those. Number two, restaurants that use their own workers to fulfill those deliveries. Right now, there's a fee associated with that. We'll be waiving that fee as well. And then third, we do have some restaurants that have also partnered with Uber Eats to process orders on the restaurant's respective website. So essentially, an eater goes onto the restaurant's website, requests what they want to order, and then Uber Eats is the platform responsible for processing and delivering that order. We're also going to remove all fees associated with all orders processed via the restaurant's online website as well. So irrespective of whether you're a restaurant that works with Uber Eats or not, those three fees will be waived when you're on the platform. And we had originally talked about a 6-week campaign, but after discussions with the city attorney's office and the economic development team and your staff, we agreed late yesterday to extend that all the way through May 31st.
No, and I appreciate that. And it's certainly come a long way since we started talking in December. There's really still not much on the delivery side for the small restaurants. And I wish you guys would consider, even if it's a 1-week promotional blitz or something, to offer a little bit more. But let's hear, I know that one of our restaurant owners has been waiting to speak, so I'm going to hear from her, and then we'll bring it back to the virtual dais.
Okay. Stephanie, you are our next caller. Cheeseburger baby. Hi, Stephanie. Good morning.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me. So can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I just kind of want to break things down as a small restaurant owner. You know, at the end of the day, we're left with, if we go home with 10% in our pocket, we're doing a great job. So I just want to break it down for you. So right now, like, our deliveries are at 80%. Normally, our deliveries with Uber would be 20%. So they take 30% marketplace fees. Let's not get this confused with delivery fees, because customers pay the delivery fees and Uber does not, so it doesn't cost them anything. So $100,000 and they take 30%, okay, at 20%. So 30% of 20 grand, right, is 6 grand, leaving me with $4,000 in my pocket. Now, if I do 80%, which I'm doing right now since COVID, that's $80,000, You take 30% of that, that's $24,000, which leaves me at a negative $14,000. So I'm at a loss. I'm at a huge loss this year. So driving demand, Uber keeps saying you're going to drive demand, but driving demand only benefits them. So, and all of this and everything that they're doing is beneficial to them. They're not coming down on marketplace fees. And that's why I asked to cap the fees at a certain percentage only during the pandemic, only during the state of emergency, because now a lot of our restaurants depend on Uber. So like I said, my business itself went from 20% delivery to 80%. So this is how we're going into a negative hole. This is why you're seeing all these restaurants closed. It's not sustainable. And that's why I'm asking Uber to please help the small businesses, bringing more restaurants onto the platform and draining them and giving them like a slow death is not going to help. And that's why I'm saying, like, if you cap the fees, that's how you help pickup. We do not want to create crowds. That's the whole point of, we don't do pickup even after midnight because of the crowd situation. So that doesn't help either. Like, trust me, I've been through that with the police, especially me being open from till 5 in the morning. So,
caller, your time is up. We appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. No, we hear you, Stephanie. I hear what you're saying. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this particular item at this time? Seeing no hands, we're going to go back up to the virtual days. I just have some questions because I'm confused, because it seems like Uber Eats, unless I misunderstood something, I heard them say that they were working on the deliveries and the delivery fee, not just the marketing portion of it. Or maybe I misunderstood. And also, my second question is, we're here talking about one delivery group via Uber Eats, who so eloquently talked about what they were offering. However, there are other operators, delivery mechanisms. Is this only going to apply to Uber Eats, who basically have stepped up to be a partner, or is this applying to all deliveries? The same thing for the city of Miami Beach, for any restaurant who has, whether they use Uber or Dash, or I don't even know what all of them are, but I don't know who could answer that. Michael, I know you're the sponsor of this. I don't know if you have.
I'll tell you what my research has shown, and I certainly would allow Raquel to flesh that out. There are other operators that do deliveries, but Uber Eats has the overwhelming majority of market share. My understanding is also that Uber Eats has the highest fees. The other platforms' fees are all lower. So Uber is the largest, has the most deliveries, and charges the most, which is why we were trying to get them to bring it down, because to their credit, people use them. People use Uber Eats a lot.
Raquel?
I don't know if Raquel or Javi would like to flesh that out further.
Commissioner Steinberg, to your first question about the types of discounts that Uber is offering, Javi laid out three ways that they would be offering discounts. So for those restaurants that utilize Uber to process their orders online through the business's own website, there would be a discount there or a waiver of fees. Then also for those restaurants that utilize their own delivery personnel, there would be a waiver of fees for processing those types of orders, as well as for restaurants that have orders that are just for pickup. So the customers would just order online and pick it up themselves. There will be a waiver of those types of fees. And I do want to clarify, when we talk about Miami Beach residents, it's not necessarily just residents, but Miami Beach eaters. So if someone is working in the city of Miami Beach and they order from a restaurant to their location within Miami Beach, that would also qualify. As far as the other delivery services, what we've seen through the grant, and I'll provide an update on the grant that we're offering, we've seen companies that are using Postmates, DoorDash, Grubhub, and some other smaller third-party delivery companies. However, many of the companies that are applying for the grant are utilizing Uber Eats at a higher level. And this is just anecdotal. Of course, we have 600 restaurants in the city. And so we're just looking at a few of the grant applications and coming up with an assessment. We are not certain as to the market share that Uber has in Miami Beach, but we do assume that it is very high based on the grant applications that we've received.
And do you have a recommendation?
I do recommend that we move forward with the partnership. If there are any ways to refine the proposal, I would say that, you know, we should have the time to go ahead and do that and then come back perhaps to the commission with a fine-tuned proposal. I think that Uber Eats has been really collaborative. We've been meeting quite frequently for a couple of months now, trying to get to the best proposal possible. And they have shown that they are willing to be a partner with the city even after this proposal had been published. We went back to them and asked them for more, and they were willing. So I'm sure that we could continue to have discussions with them to see if we could improve upon the proposal.
Commissioner, I'd like to answer your first question, which I think is probably a question that many have. What we're doing here, being proactive and working with the cities, trying to be as innovative and as flexible as possible. Stephanie made a lot of great points, and trust me, we completely understand the frustration. We completely understand, everything that she said. The challenge for companies like ours is that there is a fixed cost associated with a delivery person delivering that order within 30 minutes, right? There's insurance costs associated with that. There's mileage and time. Delivery workers here in Miami make well above minimum wage before even taking in tips. We're paying a pretty good wage to these delivery people to make sure that food is being delivered 30 minutes. And then finally, the last challenge that we have specific to Miami Beach is that unlike, Chicago or New York City or other very hyper-dense markets where we have a lot of delivery people that are on bicycles or scooters or mopeds, Miami's a challenging market because the average delivery of an order from Miami Beach is about 4 to 5 miles.
Stop. Can anybody...
Excuse me, Commissioner, are you having audio difficulties?
I'm sorry, I'm having some technical difficulties. I don't know if it's my computer or if it's, because I can't hear Javi that well. Is it my computer or is it something that you're also hearing as an issue?
I think it's you, because if I can hear, then it's got to be you.
Yeah, I'm getting him clear here also.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure everybody can hear everything. No problem. Keep going. Sorry, I apologize.
No worries. So, because the delivery radiuses for a market as widespread as Miami Beach are a little wider, right? You have a lot of restaurants, for example, on South Beach that are delivering to North Beach. Even across the bridge, about 20% of all orders from Miami Beach restaurants go into Edgewater, Brickell. It becomes a bit costly, and the fees that we charge restaurants are really the fee that we rely on to keep the marketplace working for both the restaurant and the consumer. And the vast majority of that cost is fixed related to the cost of the delivery person. So on all orders in which we're not using an Uber Eats delivery person to fulfill that order, that's why we're willing to come to the table and temporarily remove these fees to help the restaurant industry. But unfortunately, on those orders in which an Uber Eats delivery person is delivering that order, it becomes very, very challenging for us to deliver that order if we can't rely on the fees that we charge the restaurant because of the costs associated with the delivery person and insurance.
All right. Thank you so much. Commissioner Gongora, you have your hand up. Anybody else would like to comment? Samuel and Minor, any thoughts? Commissioner Minor?
I have a quick question I'd like to clarify to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. Delivery fees are what's paid by the consumer, right? And the marketplace fees are what's paid by the restaurant. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, under the proposal that you've worked out with the city, you're doing discounts and waivers on marketplace fees for pickups. Are there any discounts on those marketplace fees for deliveries?
So, Commissioner, on the restaurant side, essentially what we're doing is we are removing the marketplace fees that restaurants pay on all orders that do not involve an Uber Eats delivery person. So all of the fees associated with the three other ways in which restaurants can work with us, as part of this partnership for all restaurants in Miami Beach or small businesses, we're going to remove those fees through May 31st. On the eater side, we are going to waive the delivery fee for a 6-week time period. We had originally proposed 4 weeks. We're going to up that to 6 weeks, sort of as an incentive to encourage Miami Beach residents to order from local restaurants. And I would say that we actually have data that proves that this has been very successful. We've done two similar partnerships to this one. With the first one we did was with the city of Orlando over the summer when the pandemic first hit. And we saw an increase in 30% of orders from small businesses, from small restaurants, as part of that partnership that we worked on with the city of Orlando. Earlier in the fall of 2020, the city of North Miami Beach also reached out to us because they had seen what we had done in Orlando. And that partnership was a little bit different because the city did use some of their funds to sort of complement the restaurant component of the partnership. But we did the same thing on the eater side. We removed the delivery fees for eaters for a 30-day time period, and we saw a similar impact. So we're very confident that we're going to see a similar impact in terms of additional revenue, which is, I think, what restaurants value most, by really incentivizing and encouraging residents to order from these restaurants by removing the delivery fee associated to the consumer.
Okay, I'll turn it over to Miner, who I think has his hand raised.
Yes.
Thank you, and thank you, Commissioner Gongora, for this item. Just a couple of questions. I think Raquel addressed this, and maybe Michael as well. The cost that will be incurred by the city, I think there are no costs. This is sort of the marketing that we will do with social media and what have you, which is really kind of a fixed cost anyway.
That's correct, Commissioner Miner. The city.
That's my understanding.
One other question. Curious if there are other cities or municipalities that have a similar program. I mean, are we pioneers on this, or is there any comparables to look at?
So, when we initially began looking at this potential partnership, we were comparing to the North Miami CRA and the City of North Miami, and they were actually contributing financially to the partnership. And in terms of reimbursements for third-party fees, I know that North Miami was allocating about $5,000 per restaurant. With the restaurant grant that we have established, we are contributing $1,000 or up to $1,000 per restaurant. So it would be a different commitment overall than what we've seen done in North Miami. The proposal today does not require the city to have a financial commitment as far as offsetting any of the costs for marketing or fee waivers.
And how about the terms with Uber Eats? Are there comparables to look at?
Javi, if you would like to touch on what you did with Orlando, we would take on a similar approach, except our campaign would last longer, and we would not be participating in the same way as Orlando and North Miami did. So essentially, Uber is providing the lion's share of the partnership, and we're going to be contributing as far as marketing and advertising of the partnership.
Thank you.
All right, I need to bring this in. Can you guys hear me? I want to make sure my computer is now working. Okay, I need to bring this in for a landing. We have other items that we need to tackle. So first of all, Commissioner Gongora, thank you so very much for advocating and bringing this forward. And, you know, I think that we are really in a much better place than we would have been, because we want to help our businesses. And I really appreciate Uber Eats stepping up. And it sounds like, from what I hear from Raquel, based on what they're doing elsewhere, we have a better end of the situation here. So kudos to you, Commissioner Gongora, for getting us to this point. Can we, what would you like to do? Because I need to get going.
Yes, I hear you. Okay, number one, I do want to approve this deal today and for it to have a favorable recommendation from neighborhoods to get the ball rolling, so I'm going to move it. But I also want to tell those listening, our restaurants and Uber Eats, I still want to get more. You know, I always love more public benefits, and I really want to continue working with you to see what we can do to provide more relief to our restaurants. So I haven't given up, but I am accepting this deal for now. And then finally, and briefly before we conclude the item, I'd like Raquel to also give us a brief update on the program that the city is funding, how much money has been spent, how many restaurants have applied, how that money is looking, because I want people to know that the city is also doing our part to help small restaurants with these small grants as well. So I move it with that proviso.
Minor, Vice Chair Minor.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Show it done as favorable. Raquel, can you just quickly give Commissioner Gongora his response?
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. So to date, 36 restaurants have applied for the restaurant reimbursement grant. Of those 36 applications, 14 have been awarded and approved. 12 are pending submittal of additional backup documents. So we've asked those restaurants to update us with their proof of commission payments or provide us with a vendor registration in order for us to actually cut them a check. Six of the restaurants are ineligible or have withdrawn due to ineligibility. Two are pending payment of code fines. So those restaurants will not be able to receive the grant until they have paid their code fines. And then we have two newer applications that have yet to be evaluated. It's also important to note that 48 additional restaurants have begun an application, but have not completed and submitted the application. So they would be called in progress.
Okay, thank you. If you could, maybe like at the beginning of March, send us an update of where we're at then so we can see how it changes by LTC or whatever easy means.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Raquel, for your work on this, Raquel, Alec, and everybody else. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Raquel, for your work on this and everybody involved. And thank you to the businesses like Cheeseburger Baby who are fighting to really survive during this pandemic. And I appreciate you calling in and always being such a great partner to the city of Miami Beach. With that, we're going to move on out of order. Next item we're calling is item number 6. And that is the updated discussion regarding the Police Citizen Relations Committee's motion expressing concern and requesting enhanced review of sidewalk cafe permit applications. Who would like to present on this item? It is co-sponsored by Commissioners Samuelin and Minor. And I don't know if we have anybody from administration on right now, but I will let Commissioner Samuelin has his hand up. You can tee us up and then I'll let Vice Chair Minor as well.
Sounds great, Madam Chair. Happy to tee us up. I always love talking about sidewalk cafes and things around this topic. The bottom line here is that while we have some rules and regulations, once a sidewalk cafe operator perhaps strays, we have not been as tough in the initial permitting to operate on the sidewalk cafe or as tough in the renewals. I'm very pleased with what the administration has put forth. They have outlined some criteria. It's on page 5. There's several different criteria here that my colleagues are probably aware of, and perhaps someone from the administration or legal may want to, you know, briefly touch on, because I think they're pretty straightforward. And my goal is that we can get a favorable recommendation out of this committee, and also delighted to have Commissioner Minor as a co-sponsor. So perhaps we could hear from someone briefly from the city administration or city attorney side.
Yes, Commissioner Minor, do you want to speak now or do you want to wait till after? It's up to you.
No, I'll wait. Proud to co-sponsor Commissioner Samuelin.
Eric or Foxner?
So, I'll take the first crack at it, and Alex can add on anything. But what this ordinance does is it gives us a set of criteria with which to better evaluate the operations and behavior of the sidewalk cafes that are in place prior to issuing a renewal. Commissioner Samulin was correct in saying that, you know, the renewal process was almost a perfunctory, administrative process, that if someone came in for a renewal, they were almost automatically being renewed. This gives us a lot more control and a lot more teeth to, weigh in the behavior of the operators and how the sidewalk cafe has been performing in relation to our expectations before we renew. Items that we're going to be taking into consideration, such as violations of the city code, violations of federal, state, or county law, changes to the corporate entity, any reviews pertaining to the business establishment or sidewalk cafe, complaints regarding the business establishment or sidewalk cafe, and as well as other information which may be relevant, applicable, or essential to such determination. So gives us a lot more latitude in evaluating the performance.
Okay, sounds good. Alec Boxer?
Yes, Commissioner, and I think Eric touched on the main aspects of what the criteria to be considered. We did not have this criteria before, so I think that was part of the intent, is to make sure that we have a basis by way of which there's an evaluation done by the administration, the city manager, in order to identify whether or not there are going to be any renewals or any additional applications. As Commissioner Samulin and yourself, Commissioner, and I think everyone that's presently on a commission right now knows that oftentimes we have a struggle in terms of some of the operators and how they may conduct their business operations. There's a level of maybe a deceit or maybe misrepresentation. We've seen the Yelp reviews, the TripAdvisor reviews. So at this point in time, you know, this was meant for us to be able to evaluate that, even though we may not have been able to essentially catch these unscrupulous operators while they're engaging in a deceptive practice, it really helps to kind of solidify our ability to control the bad operators and to make sure that they no longer continue to, to plague the city in terms of, our tourists and taking advantage of them. Now, I will tell you that there are going to be a few other changes to the ordinance. We do not expect that any of the criteria that Eric read out, I think it's A through F, there may be just some modifications to the ordinance itself, nothing really substantive, but it'll be just a further clarification when and if this gets favorably recommended to the commission and brought back in February, there may be a little bit of cleanup. The one thing we're trying to avoid and to make sure is that there is no review. And what I mean by review, that the only way they're going to be able to challenge our decision to either deny the application or renew it is by actually taking legal action against us, as opposed to going to the special master for a review of that. We believe that's kind of important, because if we're going to be able to use the criteria in order to deny the renewals or an original application, as long as we are not doing it arbitrary or with any other type of a basis other than legitimate criteria, that shouldn't be reviewed. This is our property. We've been very, 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 very specific on how we want our property to be dealt with. So if there's going to be a challenge, you're going to have to sue us in circuit court, and they're going to have to allege that we either discriminated against them or did something that was legally inappropriate. But we believe this is the best way to really kind of address the good operators, and then, of course, weed out the bad operators. And with that, I can answer any questions that you may have. But like I said, there will be a few changes. I want everyone in the neighborhoods meeting to at least be aware that there will be a few modifications.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. Commissioner Minor, I know you wanted to speak after. I do see Commissioner Samulin's hand is still up. So, Commissioner Samulin. Commissioner Minor.
I'll defer to Commissioner Samulin.
Thank you. Commissioner Minor, you're a wonderful co-sponsor and colleague. What a pleasure to be with you all here. I just have three yes-no questions here, and then look forward to hearing from my colleagues. First, we're on a month-to-month approving sidewalk cafe permits now. So my assumption is that we'll stay on a month to month, get these rules in place before we then proceed and allow the 1 year. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was the direction that was given to us in the January commission meeting.
Wonderful. Number two, if by chance an operator changes ownership, it's a different corporate entity or something changes, would they then have the right when that new entity came in to apply for a sidewalk cafe permit?
Eric, you want me to answer that?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so we've contemplated that. We've been watching the game, right? We're aware of the game where you've got a corporate entity who's been issued violations, and then they go ahead and they change their corporate name. And what we're gonna do is go to the corporate structure and identify who the corporate officers are. And if we find out that there is a link or a connection to the previous sidewalk cafe operator by way of their corporate entity, then we will of course factor that in. And that's why we included that one criteria to be considered about the name change and the corporate entity structure change. We did that intentionally to stop that type of tomfoolery from happening. So we believe that that'll be a basis for us to factor it in, and if we feel justified to deny it.
Yep, that all makes sense. But if indeed a true brand new corporate entity, you know, maybe someone sold a building or a brand new company came in, they're not locked to our cycle. They could come in mid-year and legitimately apply. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, Commissioner.
Okay, that's fabulous. No, this is all going in the right direction. And my last question is, let's say someone comes forward, because this is typically an annual process, and they are denied. They didn't meet this criteria, and I understand the point of not being able to appeal. Would they, under this ordinance, be allowed 1 year from then, during the next cycle, to reapply? Is that prohibited, or they could do that?
They could do that again during the next, because these permits are only for 1 year. If they're denied, they can reapply with maybe some additional criteria that will alleviate the concern of the administration. That's number one. Number two, if that is unsuccessful, then they could reapply during the next cycle.
Fabulous. So my last closing comment is I'm delighted with where this is. And I would just ask, I'm sorry, Eric, did you want to say something?
Could I just add one caveat to what the answer you received on the last question? The one caveat is, unless the sidewalk cafe had been prohibited from applying because of violations in the prior year, under our existing sidewalk cafe code of conduct, if they get four or more violations, then they are prohibited from applying for two consecutive years.
Understood. Thank you for that clarification. My last request, because we're going to tweak maybe some of the language just in the whereas clause, if there's no reason we couldn't, I think we should recognize that the Police Citizens Committee brought this idea forward. They laid out a lot of the detail. So I would just ask the City Attorney's Office Administration, unless there's any reason we couldn't, to acknowledge that committee's work as part of this. With that, I'm very pleased with where we're at, and I am finished. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Great comments. Not so much yes and no direct questions, but fine either way. Okay, Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up.
Thank you. Let me unmute myself. Okay, I appreciate the work of my colleagues on these items, and I'm cautiously optimistic that they will make things better for the Miami Beach experience. But I also get concerned sometimes with ordinances that there could be unintended consequences. And I don't want those unintended consequences to be that we become a business unfriendly city, or that we see businesses suffer as a result of this. I actually hadn't read this very carefully. I think I got it yesterday, but I was actually reading it this morning. I do think that we should look at renewals. And I certainly think that violations of city code or other laws are very important. But I'm a little concerned that we're adding that a change to the corporate entity structure could result in their denial. what happens when people sell their businesses? You know, typically a lot of times operators like to build up a business and transfer it. The way that I read this, the city manager could just take away their license. There's also a lot of vague language in this ordinance or what about F, any other information which is relevant, applicable, or essential could result in them losing their license. I don't know what that means. And then in section 3, we're saying that the city manager's determination is final and not subject to any appeal. So I think that we hire reasonable city managers that are going to do the right thing. But I get concerned when you put so much power in one person's hands and then you word your ordinance so vaguely that it gives them unfettered power to basically yank somebody's sidewalk cafe permit. Also, I think Commissioner Samuelin's questions were nice, but the truth is, if you yank their sidewalk cafe permit for the year, they're going out of business and they're not coming back. They're not going to sit around for a year waiting to apply again. So have no doubt that that will put them out of business. Maybe that's a good thing, and maybe that's a good tool for certain businesses that are repeat violators. But this ordinance is too loose for my comfort right now. There's too many undefined criteria to allow the city manager to yank it, and I don't like the fact that there's no appeal mechanism. So let me ask legal, what happens right now if this doesn't exist and I come and I apply to open a cafe and Ocean Drive or wherever, and I don't get approved right away? Can I appeal that decision today to somebody else? What would I do if for some reason somebody didn't like me and denied me?
So, Commissioner, let me provide a little bit of clarification. So this is not about mid-year yanking. This is either for the renewal or for new application. So it does not really contemplate, nor does it require that they be factored in mid-year. Remember, we have an entire penalty scheme that went into effect, was passed yesterday by the City Commission. That will identify violations and what the consequences of that. And as you may or may not recall, if there are essentially 3 violations, they lose their sidewalk cafe permit for the remainder of the permit year. And then if they get a 4th, then they're prohibited from applying for 2 years.
Alec, if I may, I agree with you, and I voted for that. Okay. That ordinance isn't before us today, so I don't want to go off on a tangent. This is something strict. This is saying, basically, if you want to renew, then if you've changed corporate entity, manager can enter a denial, no appeal. Anything that the manager determines relevant, applicable, or essential, I don't know what that would be, because it's kind of vague, could just deny. When I read things like that, I get very concerned. I, as you may know from my last item with Uber Eats, I'm here to promote and help good small businesses. I voted for the ordinance you're talking about because if they have 4 or more violations, they should be closed down. This, though, adds all these other interesting and new things that allow their license to be taken away. And I don't know how I feel about that. Has the Chamber of Commerce or Ocean Drive Association or Lincoln Road Bid, anybody that's in the business community been given this to opine or weigh in?
As I understand it, they have not as of yet, but these are all, Commissioner, these are all just factors to be considered. Neither one of them is essentially a determining factor, but these are all criteria, all of which that can be considered in order for a determination to either renew or approve a new application. And remember, everything that we've heard from the commission regarding sidewalk cafes is, you know, these people are operating on the city's property. And everything we've heard is that there's no more appetite to allow kind of the bad operators. So this is just a mechanism by way of which we could evaluate that.
No, and I agree with that. So let me go back to my original specific question. Sure. I want to open a cafe on Ocean Drive. The city manager or whoever reviews the application doesn't like me and denies it for whatever they deem relevant. What can I do today? Who can
today,
I go to?
You could today. You can arguably take an appeal before the city special master.
Okay, so you're taking away that right here. If the city manager decides based on whatever they deem relevant, applicable, or essential, you're saying you can't appeal to anybody. I don't know. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think that's a great thing. And is barring there being any evidence that we acted, arbitrary, capricious, or that we did some type of conduct that was unlawful, for example, based upon race, gender, sexual orientation, then sue us. Sue us in circuit court and prove that what we did was legally inappropriate. But at this point in time, I take the position, and I think that I've taken the opinion of the commission and prior ordinances, that this is our property and we're going to hold people to a higher standard. So, and that's why we've established a criteria, just things to think about before we blankly authorize another operator to go on there and continue to kind of conduct themselves inappropriately. So that's kind of my thoughts on the whole process.
Commissioner Gongora, okay. Do you have any other questions?
I think that whatever happens today, that this needs to be published to the Chambers of Commerce, to all of the bids and business associations, because there's some language that needs to be amended before this can pass. This is not tight today. I think it's a good first draft, but I couldn't support this as a final draft as an ordinance.
Commissioner Minor.
Yeah, I also wanted to keep to state why this even came about, this ordinance. The Police Citizens Relations Committee had done, an audit of all the permits that had been issued. Unfortunately, it's not in this memo. It was in our last neighborhoods meeting, so I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there were hundreds and hundreds of permits that had been issued without one single one being denied. So certainly something was amiss when we're just handing it out so easily. And obviously, considering the issues that we've had with some of the operators, we're looking to tighten this. So I'll move the item for consideration to the full commission.
Okay, and I just want to open it up to the public, as we do at committee, and make sure to see if there's anybody who would like to speak. And I see one hand is up. Jane Krupp, you are recognized.
Okay, you can hear me now.
Yes.
So I just want to say that I have been working for the past year. I'm on 14th and Ocean. I have been on the ground working with code police, getting ripped off of buildings because they didn't have permits. And we have great codes and we have great code people and great police. The problem is we have no consequences for the bad behavior. And a vetting process would enable us to create a higher bar for these people. And the more hoops you make them jump through, the more the bad people fall away. And I agree with Alexander Boxner. Let them go sue us in court when we deny a permit. And let them open up their books, open up who they are, have some transparency. They are not going to go to court and sue us, the bad operators. This is a great tool for vetting. And I think we should go as hard as possible on this process, because the bad guys will go away in the beginning. And I, having to deal with the consequences for the past year, you can hear the sirens, of no consequences, is this is what we have now. We actually do have some good codes and good people, but consequences and vetting, I can't say that strong enough to free up our code people and free up our police officers so they don't have to go arbitrate, you know, somebody skipping out on a bill because they were getting ripped off. So that's what I have, my comment on that subject. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller, Irene Bigger. Irene, you're on.
Hi, everybody. Yes, I also want to voice my support for this. I'm a resident of Ocean Drive, and I do see what's going on. I believe, I'm sure the commission understands how clever these bad operators are about going around the law. They use multiple DBAs. They try to hide who they are. I believe that if they have four or more violations, you know, we shouldn't necessarily worry about whether their business survives. They know the law. We need to be proactive, as Jane said, to ease the burden on our code and police. And I think this is a very good direction, and I wholeheartedly support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller, Mitch Novick. Mitch, you're on.
Unmuted the prompt. Mitch Novick, I served on the first incarnation of the Ocean Drive Committee called the Ocean Drive Task Force. We implemented a code of conduct back then. It's unfortunate that it, 4 or 5 years later, we're still discussing this. To operate a cafe on our sidewalks and along Ocean Drive, it's now on the street. They should be put up to especially high standards. It is a privilege, not a right. And in terms of Ocean Drive itself, it's a disaster. It's like a street that's it's like a mouth that's missing a lot of teeth. I believe that street should be opened, returned to vehicular traffic. It's a complete embarrassment and a disaster. And I hope we're not here next year or in 2 years from now discussing the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitch. Seeing no other hands, I'm bringing it back up. Public comment is now closed. So, yeah, I mean, I think we should move this to the commission because my concern is that if it lingers to the truth is we're on month to month right now. There's no stability for anybody. No one knows what's going to happen. And you want to give these everybody stability and understanding what the rules are going to be moving forward. Now, having said that, our city attorney, Boxner, just said that there are going to be some tweaks that need to be made to the language here. Is that correct? That we're going to see a different iteration, slightly different, some more clarification. Is that correct?
That is correct. There will be some modifications to it, yes.
So I think conceptually, let's move it to... Oh, Commissioner Gongora, you have your hand up. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of quick things. One, because... With all due respect for the people that speak, who I have a lot of respect for, you know, we choose to live in Miami Beach because we love it. And I've been spending a fair amount of time lately on Ocean Drive, and it's been wonderful and blissful and peaceful. I haven't encountered any bad things. Of course, I'm not out late at night, but it's beautiful to walk in socially distant space. I haven't seen any type of bad scenes going on. And I think that is a bit of a credit to this commission and administration and my colleagues who have really focused in on this issue. But I don't understand the constant criticism of the city or the district from the people that live there, because you chose to live there and it's a good area and we're going to work on making it better, but it's not a bad area. And I don't like hearing those criticisms of the city or any district contained herein, number one. Number two, I think there's a misunderstanding from the residents that have called in to speak about what this item does and doesn't do. The commission recently passed a much stricter ordinance to allow to close down bad businesses that have violations. Clearly, nobody wants bad businesses or bad operators to operate, but we also can't send the message that we don't want good operators. My concern about this ordinance, some of it is good. Clearly to me, if people have violations, that should be considered. If people have a lot of negative complaints, that should be considered. Those could be considered bad operators, to use the words of our residents, that we wouldn't want necessarily to be rubber stamped for a renewal on their sidewalk cafe permit. But when I see things about just changes like a sale or a transfer, or when I see vague language about any information deemed relevant or a review, not even a bad review, it says any review, maybe a good review could cause your license to be yanked under the way this is written today. So there is some concerning vague language here. And taking away somebody's right to get an opinion from a special master costs a lot of money. Anybody who brings a lawsuit in circuit court today, you can expect to spend, let's face it, against the city, $50,000 or more. So it's quite a financial obligation that you're adding as well by taking out the appeal process. With that said, I do think this ordinance is a good step, and I hope to be able to support it at commission with some changes along the lines of those that I've mentioned today. So I'm going to second it today, but I would not support this specific language as it's written today when it goes to the city commission. And I would encourage the administration and sponsors to continue to work on that. Number two, as part of my second, I would like this ordinance sent to the chambers and the bids and the business groups, because I think I'm not here to advocate for them. Let them weigh in on it. But I do think that this is a little heavy handed. But I am going to second it today because I do want to also clean up Ocean Drive and see the bad operators not be there. But I don't want to turn it into a ghost town or get rid of good operators either. And right. I do want to say one more thing, you know, like there's a lot of businesses that are going under. You know, I posted a couple weeks ago, News Cafe closed down, hopefully, you know, temporarily while they figure themselves out. That's an iconic historic business that I would think most would consider not to be on the bad operator side. So you'd want to make sure that what you're doing to weed out the bad operators doesn't strangle the good ones either.
And with that, motion passes. Thank you so much. We're going to move on to the next item. Item number 11, I said we'd be going a little bit out of order. There's some time-sensitive items we need to take care of. And after item 11, we're going to take item number 8 per request. So item 11 is regarding the holiday lights, my favorite topic. Who is here to present?
We could bring over someone from property management, please.
All right, what is it that, Eric, you all need from us today regarding this item?
So we're currently out to competitive procurement through an RFQ process for our holiday lighting contractor. Our prior contractor finished the term of their contract, and we took ownership of the display material that had been purchased over the 4 years of that contract. And we're getting ready to enter into a new one for the upcoming year, 2021 holiday season. And we wanted to understand from the commission's perspective whether they're happy with the displays that we had in 2020 or whether they'd like to see some modifications. And I see that Elizabeth Miro is on. Elizabeth, you want to add anything to what I said?
That's exactly it. Basically, because everything you see before you is the inventory, everything we have purchased. Right now, we are going to be going to a pre-bid conference to issue the following RFQ. And what we're looking for is direction from the committee in terms of, are there any specific areas that you would like to see lighting expanded? And we seek your recommendation.
You know, when you ask that question, everybody's going to say, yes, everywhere. Stones unturned. I mean, it's such an open-ended question that you're giving us to answer. So I think, let's see, whose hand was up first? Commissioner Gongora.
Great. Thank you. And I reclaim sponsorship of this because I used to sponsor holiday lighting. And that's why we saw increases from 17 through this past year. You look at the budgetary numbers, they went up each year at neighborhoods. I nudged Commissioner Steinberg each year to vote for more and more and more money, for more decor and more lighting. to the point that in 2020, we spent a lot of money. But I think that the money that we spent, as I understand it, is for decor that we now own and store. I think all of the items that are in the photographs that follow the printed item are things that we bought and we're presently holding on to in the fiscal year 2020, which is why you see the budgetary impact went down in 2021 significantly. I recognize that we're in a difficult budgetary year this year, but I love holiday lighting and I think it's important to our city. I would say keep it at the same level that you are proposing at that, you know, kind of the amount that we saw in 18, 19, and 21, the more reasonable level, because I don't think we're going to have to spend as much because a lot of the equipment we now own. On top of that, you know, Commissioner Minor sponsored and we've all supported the enhanced lighting on 41st Street, which is fabulous and wonderful. I love that white lighting on the palm trees. I'm part of the Palm Tree Caucus that we are keeping. We now have an item that I think Commissioner and I are sponsoring in 71st Street to enhance lighting there, and we're going to see improvements. That's regular. So this is an addition to that. So I think we should keep it at that amount.
Okay.
Minor?
Yeah, no, I agree with Commissioner Gongora's comments. I'll even add that that I had brought an item at Commissioner Gongora's co-sponsoring with me for all year sort of holiday lighting on 71st Street. I have actually gotten a lot of emails recently about lighting in specific areas in South Beach, and I'm not going to go through it now. It is. I know it's a budgetary item, and we did have a full lighting plan that had been in the works. It was a $50 million plan for the citywide. It got sort of reduced, I think, to $10 million because of the budgetary cuts. And my understanding now is it's probably being pushed aside until we have a better idea of our finances. That being said, I'm a big believer, obviously, based on some of the items I've brought, that not only is holiday lighting so imperative from an aesthetic standpoint, but I really believe it helps reduce crime, which our police department has consistently stated as well. And it also helps with economic development, because the better lit areas are, people will come to see the lights, hopefully spend some money and support our businesses. So it's hard to quantify, but I think there are specific areas, and I'm actually planning on bringing an item to discuss sort of pinpointed areas where we could potentially do increased lighting and hopefully not at a great expense to our city. And I just think, one, our residents are asking for it, and I do believe it's one of those that pays for itself because of the economic benefit and crime reduction that it provides our city and our residents.
Okay.
I just have a quick question, Elizabeth. So the $500,000 goes to do what for fiscal year 21?
So in fiscal year 21, as I mentioned, we currently do own all the materials. What we pay for basically will be labor and storage at this point. And in fiscal year 20, where you saw that it dropped, we also did a refurbishment. So much of the lighting that we purchased in the first year has been refurbished, and it's now good for several years thereafter.
And I also noticed that you have the main corridors, like the 5th Street and 41st Street, but you don't have 71st Street. I think it would be nice if all the major entryways to mm-hmm. and from the city would be there. So I don't know if that was just an oversight or just didn't make it on the list.
I believe that we have right now just on 73rd, but certainly I will look into it.
Yeah, because
I'm sorry, I was going to say we can also move this lighting in different areas now that we own it. So,
yeah. So I mean, okay. So essentially, I just want to make sure that, you know, if we're having 5th Street and 41st Street, we should also have 71st Street, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not some of it's single family, but some of it is commercial. And I think that would be appropriate.
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, you have the support by acclamation.
Perfect.
With the exception of Gongora. No, I'm kidding. What, Commissioner Gongora?
Can I ask one more question before? No, I'm always going to vote for lighting. My question, okay, Collins Avenue between 46th and 64th is in the list for holiday decor, but what would it cost to do white lighting on the palm trees in that area, similar to what we see on 41st Street? I'm getting that question from a lot of neighbors in the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association.
We can look right now. We actually expanded the lighting at Loomis Park, and we did so at very little cost with our existing electrical contractor. So we can certainly look to price that out, to expand the lighting there.
Could you price that out and bring it back to Neighborhoods Committee next month? What it would cost to A, do it during the holidays, or B, make it permanent so that we could see what those numbers look like and consider that perhaps as an enhancement?
Certainly.
Although I will say, would it be appropriate at Neighborhoods or at Finance? I mean, at the end of the day, Finance should look at it, how it interrelates to all the other costs. I don't know that our job in Neighborhoods, I don't know if it's to dissect the numbers of it, but Commissioner Minor, which we should be, by the way, scrutinizing, especially going into this economic downturn, but Commissioner Minor.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Gregor. I think that's a great great question. We've heard that a lot from the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association, so I support your request. It's all a matter of degree, but if you look at the 41st Street lighting, it's $400,000 to light up the entire 41st Street, which is 251 palm trees. I think there's some minimal maintenance expenses on top of that, but that lasts for 7 years. It seems like a pretty good return on investment for less than $500,000 to get that for almost a decade. I just will also follow up, Chair, the 71st Street. I believe that's coming back to commission because that's the item that Commissioner Gongora is co-sponsoring with me. It's basically two block area around the Normandy Fountain and covering the commercial district. The expensed out is $69,000, and I believe that's coming back to commission for final approval.
Right. I support that, and thank you for that. I just wanted to make sure.
Just one other item. There was actually, it was interesting because Lummis Park had some beautiful lighting this year that our residents really, very positive feedback. So kudos to the administration. Interestingly, it actually was almost removed early. The contractor had actually gone and people were sending me pictures. The city administration was able to intervene and stop it. I guess they have to remove the lights before turtle nesting season on April 1st. I would like to follow up with the administration. I think there's obviously an issue there with having the lighting. I'd like to explore, one, if there's a different type of lighting that we could use, whether there's maybe certain areas that we could do the lighting that would not interfere with that. I'd like a little more information because, for example, I brought it up recently about South Point Park, about lighting and basically the concern was about the turtle. But I'm wondering if there are certain areas and certain ways that we could accomplish the goal without interfering with the turtle season. And I understand, by the way, turtle season is not such, it's actually a state requirement. So we do have to be pretty careful because we obviously don't want to violate the state laws.
Mark, Commissioner Samuel.
Thank you, Commissioner Steinberg. As a guest, I try and be agreeable when I can. In this case, I can try and be a little agreeable. I agree with Commissioner Gongora strongly on that enhancement. I, too, have heard that feedback from Mid-Beach, so ditto, underline on that. And I'm going to also ditto and underline what Commissioner Minor just said. I think the whole issue of lighting is a critical one. And we just recently saw a very thoughtful resolution from So Be Safe. And so I am very intrigued and want to pursue what Commissioner Miners brought forward of how do we make sure we're environmentally friendly, treat the turtles properly, and do it in a way that is transparent and fully compliant with jurisdictions. And at the same time, ensure that we are putting public safety first. So I know that's a rich issue. I've had some discussions independently with MBPD about this, but I would like to absolutely hear more. I'm going to be pushing that specific item as well.
Yes, I think we're all in agreement on that. Commissioner Gongora, your hand is still up.
No, that's it. So we'll approve this at the same level and they'll come back to us with what it would look like to enhance the palm trees in Mid-Beach. Great.
All right. Acclamation. Moving on to item number eight. Item number eight is, and I apologize, I'm working off the computer today and not an actual paper agenda. Item number eight is discussion regarding Miami Beach Community Development Corporation. Who is here to present on that?
Sure. Could I like start queue it up?
Yeah, why don't you tee it up for us? It's your item.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I put this on. I've always been interested, but thank you all for my colleagues putting me to represent us on the Affordable Housing Committee. So I've been spending a lot of time reviewing affordable housing throughout the city. I heard a very lengthy presentation from the Miami Beach Community Development Corporation about all of the improvements that they've made since those bad years in 2013-14 when the city removed their funding to improve their situation and provide better housing for residents. And from a personal perspective, I get far less complaints than I used to, because I know when I first came back on the commission, I had a lot of complaints about the housing I'm not getting any longer. The city isn't allowing Miami Beach Community Development Corp to be considered, as I understand it, for any of the federal funds we receive, whether those be CDBG or other funds. And they're trying to get back on track for consideration, and I'm trying to help them develop the path to get there. And I feel like all I hear from the city is, oh, they're still not good, and they still have a problem with their audit every time it comes up. But I don't feel that the city is taking any steps to affirmatively help them. We're not creating any significant new affordable housing, unfortunately. Yes, we're passing ordinances, and yes, thank goodness we're doing a workforce housing project, but we really haven't done a lot for new affordable housing. And it's my understanding, I don't know this confirmed, I asked Eric if he could find out for today, that other similar local governments in South Florida that have these public-private organizations like the Miami Beach CDC that provide affordable housing get funding from their local governments through the CDBG and other funds we receive. And we just keep telling this group no and saying you can't, but I don't feel like there's a path to help them. So that's why I put this on here. I'd like to hear from the CDC what they're doing, how they've improved. And I guess from the city's perspective, rather than continue to say we continue to have concerns, I'd like to see what is the path to perhaps aid them and what do other local governments do?
Thank you. All right. Does anybody else wish to speak before I turn it over to the public? All right, turning it over. Our first caller is Alicia. Good morning.
I think Alicia wants more lighting.
Good morning. Well, I was talking about lighting. They didn't open it up for public comment on lighting. I just want to go on record to show my support for the lighting. Commissioners, thank you so much for seeing the importance of that. And we're advocating at the Mid Beach neighborhood, of course, for 41st up to 63rd. Those palm trees, when you make a left after being on 41st, that iconic street with world-renowned hotels is very, very dark. So I don't want to take any more of your time because I know you moved on to something else. But thank you, Commissioner, for letting me speak for a second.
Yes, Alicia, I apologize about that. I've been having some technical difficulties all morning, and so I didn't see the icon raised, but thank you for putting that on the record. Now back to item number 8. Jeff Feldman, you are being recognized.
Oh, well, thank you. I was actually expecting to be after our executive director, Ahmed Martin, who I know has his hands up as well. I thank you for taking this on. Michael, thank you for your continued participation and support with the MBCDC via the commission, of course, this committee, and of course, through the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee, which I also serve on. We've been working for several years, as you all know, and I'm glad that Commissioner Samuelin's on the call as well. For several years now, having picked back up after a couple former MBCDC administrations. I'll keep my comments very brief for now, because I'd rather Ahmed present to you guys just real quick. I know time is limited here, but I just want to say, we just listened to an item where the city is considering $500,000 for lights. The city used to give the MBCDC via state and federal funds $1.2 or $1.3 million every single year up until 2013 when the problems hit this organization. Every year. We haven't gotten a dollar from the city in 7 years. And Ahmed will express to you, you know, how we have turned this ship around and righted all of, most of the wrongs. And you know, the thorn in our side has continued to be the city and staff. You know, on one hand, the staff is telling us we want to see you be successful. We want to see you. We want to help you however we can. But out of the other side of the staff's mouth is constant bludgeoning with how bad we are, how wrong we're doing things, and how many, you know. So I'm calling for that to stop. And Michael, thank you for helping us bridge this gap. We've got to close this gap, and we've got to you know, collaborate together. And, you know, we're looking for the city's help. We are the city.
Thank you for your call. Caller, we appreciate your comments.
Oh, okay. Ahmed Martin, you are recognized.
Hello. Thank you, commissioners, for hearing this item today. I'm going to keep my comments brief to give some high-level description of the arc of the organization. So in 2018, when the new leadership assumed control, there was a new board, et cetera, the organization was going to go bankrupt. However, since that time, we've gone from a $1 million annual cash flow deficit, which is equivalent to what we used to receive from the city, to a projected $120,000 annual deficit. This is despite not having a fully functioning property management staff and accounting staff for a combined 6 months out of the fiscal year 2019. We reduced our audit findings from 10 to 4, despite having the aforementioned handicaps. So why are we still running at a deficit? There aren't any other nonprofits similarly situated due to the age and number of units in our portfolio. We offer the deepest level of affordable housing to the most vulnerable population and have some of the lowest rents. And we are undercharging our rents, our tenants in many cases. Every affordable housing organization needs subsidy, municipal subsidy. And we have not received any subsidy, as Jeff mentioned, since 2013. Before that, the average was $1.1 or $1.2 million per year. We pay three times as much in insurance and utility costs than the city of Miami Beach or for similar portfolios that are located outside of Miami Beach and are owned by market rate developers. So through the CDBG and home programs, we have asked for funds from the city and were denied. In that same allocation of funds last year, $1.2 million was diverted to properties which the city of Miami Beach owns. We don't have any tax credit equity in our portfolio. And we have, you know, there's Carrefour that is a Chodo, City of Tampa, and they've all received funding through the CDBG program and the city of Miami Beach. So we're here today to ask for your support in the following ways. We're asking for support to reinstate MBCDC's Chodo status. We're asking for support for the home funds once the Chodo status is reinstated. We're asking for support through the funds related
Caller, to- Caller, your time is up. We appreciate your comments.
I don't mind giving him like one more minute, and then we'll wrap it up.
Thank you. And letters of support for external grants from the city of Miami Beach and to lower our biggest operating expense, insurance, where we want to explore the possibility of being placed on the city self-insured platform. And that in and of itself, those insurance savings would help us eliminate the deficit for the organization. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. All right, no other hands are up, bringing it up. Maria.
Good morning, Maria Ruiz, Director of Housing and Community Services. And I think the best way to tackle what was just said is to perhaps reflect back on what the agency had said to the Finance Board on September 20th of 2019. In fact, their counsel said, and I'll quote, "Nonprofits can't be judged by its past, but must be judged by existing staff and projections for the future." This was in 2019. In September of 2019, we raised the issue that the floor at the Jefferson Apartments was buckling. We are now in January of 2021. That floor has not been repaired. We were told at that meeting that there would be 95% occupancy in all the properties by December 29th of 2019, and that in fact, and I will again quote Ms. Shahzad Imami, their counsel, all of the buildings will be operating in the black. I will quote Mr. Feldman from May of 2019, where he said that the company had just turned $271,000 profit in the month of April of 2019. The Westchester, which was a building that was open back in 2019, is now closed. At the end of the day, these are the specific concerns. You have a building that has had a major violation that has not been addressed in a year and a half, and the tenants are suffering. You have a building that has been closed. It's not even being used as affordable housing because it hasn't been maintained. At the end of the day, in September, we were promised a financial plan that would show how this agency was going to resolve itself. In fact, Shahzad said in September of 2019, in 6 to 9 months, we will provide you a plan that will pursue funding from Florida Housing by October 2020. And we will propose also seeking funds for tax credits, sale, and bond financing. At the end of the day, as I said in September of 2019, this isn't an issue that should be viewed through a personal lens. We shouldn't view it emotionally. These are good people. They're doing their best. And I stand by that comment. But as it stands today, the Jefferson has not been fixed. The Westchester is offline. And now there is an assertion that is false on its face that government should subsidize a private entity in doing its business. And I think that's a very dangerous door to open, because there's a lot of other nonprofit providers who should be knocking on our door if that were the case. I appreciate the efforts that were done, but I think that the problem of this organization was so deep in 2013 that it could not be fixed. And then when it had the chance to be fixed, which, by the way, if you recall, they sold the Seymour and told us that they would be using those monies not only to deal with the turnaround of all their units, and I quote Mr. Feldman there, but also to reposition their debt service and reposition the agency's financial standing. Here we are now in 2021 being told, no, we can't do it without the city. It is a dangerous precedent that the city should step in to provide deep financial assistance to an agency that by virtue of the Jefferson alone shows that they don't have the capacity to do what needs to be done. I think that we have been very straightforward. We've been very patient. We have actually erred. You know that in 2019, we joined the county in saying, we're very concerned. We don't see this turning around. So much so that I said, I would be surprised if they could. I stand here now in January of 2021 asserting they have not. Otherwise, they would not be asking for city subsidy to do what they say they would have done. I think past this prologue in this case, and I was listening to the meetings from 2019, and I don't remember if it was Commissioner Arreola or perhaps yourself, Commissioner Gongora. One of you said, you know, if things don't get any better by the end of the year, and this is 2019, then we should look at other options. Well, subsequent to that, you've closed another building and you haven't opened up the Jefferson. You have a net deficit of units that are active through this agency. I don't know how else to say it.
Okay, any commissioners? Commissioner Gongora.
Yes, thank you, Maria. See, my concern is less about what happened in 2013, 8 years ago, and whatever personal feelings they may have with your department or you may have with their organization. I just want to be very clear. My concern is about providing as much quality, affordable housing for the low-income community. And I'm not sure. I mean, we're using a lot of the money that's coming in this year for rent relief programs and small business grants and other things due to the pandemic. But there are monies that come in, and traditionally monies used to go towards affordable housing group, and they were the main one. I understand 8 years ago they had very large problems and we stopped funding them. And that was a good thing. I think I voted in 13 to stop funding them. I'm sure I did. We all did. We had to because of what was happening. But they're out there operating buildings where our residents live and need to have quality, affordable housing available to them. And I don't see the path for them to receive assistance from the city. Isn't it true that in other local governments that have similar type organizations, that they do receive government funding? I know that they used to for many years. What is the norm? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Nobody ever answers that question for me.
So I'm actually glad you asked that question, because that raises another capacity problem with the agency. We looked at CAR-4 Supportive Housing and Opa-locka CDC, which are two other CDCs that we have supported within the past 5 years. Each of these agencies has seen subsequent increases in the amount of contributions, grants, and program income in their properties, whereas in 2018, which is the comparative year that I can get all the agencies, MBCDC had a 21% drop in grants and contributions, a 22% drop in program income, and a 99% drop in investment income. But there's even a more telling number that I think is very important. We looked at their assets to revenue ratio, Carrefour, which has built 450 units in the last 5 years, they've grown their portfolio, has a assets to income ratio of 55%. Opa-locka CDC, which is about half the size, it's smaller than MBCDC, has a 29.56 asset to revenue ratio. MBCDC's was 9.1. So I think what it comes down to is, yes, you have to go out and pursue other revenue, whether it be through grants or, as Opa-locka CDC does, they also provide credit counseling, first-time home buyer. So they're doing different things to increase revenue coming into the agency. They're not just looking at the program income, which, by the way, should increase over time because you're actually seeing a modest increase from HUD year to year. So those are the kinds of things that an agency with capacity would be going out and finding these funds. They wouldn't be going to a benefactor and saying, look, we're not doing it, so will you step in and pay the subsidy? Because there are other nonprofits that are housing providers in our city that in order to get funding, we've said to them, you got to show the viability for the period of affordability. So I think we have to hold everyone to the same standard. Otherwise, we open up the gates for other providers to say, well, why don't you give me a subsidy? We're a nonprofit too. And I think it opens up a door that shouldn't be.
Well, this is my question, because I feel like I'm not getting the exact answer I want. The city, you're calling it a subsidy, a grant, an award, whatever you want to call it. I know that they used to get monies from the city for many years as the Miami Beach Community Development Corporation. That stopped in 13 because there were problems with the agency. They're looking to see how they can apply for grants again, and it's consistently denied. Let's take Opa-locka, since she brought that one up. I know nothing about them. Does the Opa-locka CDC get any money from their city?
They get a variety of money from grants from different sources, the state and the county as well, I believe. But they're competitive grants.
Hey, but they get money from the city. Carrefour, I know, gets money from the county and I think City of Miami. So we're telling this group, we're not going to support you in any way. And I just don't understand why there's, instead of giving that message, there's not a path towards trying to bring them into a better state and seeing how we can work with them to provide our residents the best affordable housing experience.
Commissioner, that hasn't been the case. I can assure you that we have said if you ensure compliance to HUD rules and regulations and you take care of your house, which is make sure that you show us a financial plan forward, we could do that. But again, they promised us a financial plan in September of 2019. I'm in January of 2021. I have not seen a plan that shows how they will cover their operating revenues, how they will handle the recapitalization of the properties, which they assured us a plan would have been done and pursuits for funding would have been submitted by last year.
You know,
so it's not that we are an obstacle. It's that we're waiting for them to actually do what they promised.
Okay, what I'm going to do real quick, I see that the they have their hands up again in the participants, but I mean, we could spend hours on this. I know this is currently at finance. Can someone shed some light? Michael, this is here at Neighborhoods Now, and I see Commissioner Samulin's hand is up and he sits on finance. Can you tell me a little bit? Because I feel like it's already going through one process at finance and I want to make sure I understand where we're at, because otherwise we could really be here a very long time. And I don't know that we have the authority at Neighborhoods to green light anything while it's at finance. Commissioner.
Sure. I'll be happy to give the top line. And then, of course, anyone from the city administration, welcome filling in the details to it. Yeah, it appears like we're sort of having parallel conversations. I, too, am very appreciative of MBCDC. A lot of those folks are volunteering and trying to help. So that's goodness. And we really appreciate it. It's such an important cause. And that's very, very helpful. We do have a standing item at finance. In fact, we did discuss it as recently as last week, and we are tracking on some important issues that need to be addressed. The Jefferson was brought up. There were some discussion around ensuring compliance with certain reporting requirements, and we had a very productive discussion. with the individual that leads that organization, their executive director, Amesh. And I believe the action, and please, the administration, correct me if I'm wrong, was to bring it back to finance next month. So we are having that discussion. This is a good discussion, too. But that's sort of the headlines, if anyone wants to build on that.
Yeah, thank you. What I'm going to do is give courtesy, just 2-minute courtesy, to the one person who hasn't spoken yet, which I believe is their counsel. Shahrzad Emami, give you 2 minutes. Please, you have the floor.
Yes. Hi, how are you? Thank you so much. So in full disclosure, I represent both OLCDC and CAR for Supportive Housing. And just in response to Maria, my statements hold true from 2019. It's been 1 year approximately from those statements. And it is true that without any project subsidy, fixing the issues with the buildings takes much longer than it otherwise would. The organization is seeking funds and is in the process of interviewing co-developers right now. Our discussions in 2019 were thwarted actually with the co-developers that we were interviewing at that time by the county and the city. And I will have to say that, you know, in my 14 years of being an affordable housing attorney and in my 6 years of being an affordable housing professor at the University of Miami Law School, it is impossible to right 20 years of wrongs in just 2 years, which it appears is what Maria is expecting. And as you can see, the audit findings continue to go down every single year. I can also tell you that without any subsidy, you are slowly starving this organization. And it is true that CAR for Supportive Housing and Opa-locka CDC do receive subsidy on a yearly basis in the form of grants or other financing from local municipalities. In addition to that, they also receive massive amounts of tax credit equity into their portfolios, which the MBCDC does not have. And the MBCDC, it's very difficult to assemble the properties in order to get that tax credit equity. That's what we're exploring right now with co-developers. The city itself has also received government funding for the properties that that the city took over from Miami Beach CDC many years ago, and you receive those fundings every year. Why? Because you probably need those fundings in order to keep the buildings operational and in good repair. So thank you very much for allowing me to speak on this matter.
Thank you so much. All right. So Commissioner Gongora, your hand is raised. You brought this forward. It is an important discussion, and I'm glad that you brought it forward. I just want to understand what you want from this committee, since it's literally being hashed out right now, parallel, as Commissioner Samuelin said, and he's working hard on it. Right, Commissioner Samuelin?
Absolutely. You know what?
Okay, I want to understand, I'm not here to get into their funding amounts or what dollars should be awarded. I'm into understanding what is the city's belief is wrong with the organization and how do we fix that and repair the relationship so we can create quality, affordable housing. And I'm not really hearing the answers that I want to hear today. I feel like it's kind of like every time this conversation comes up, CDC says what they say, Maria says what she says, and there's no progress, no movement. I don't feel like this is moving towards a resolution, and I'm incredibly frustrated with it. So I'm not prepared to let the item go. I do understand that there are time constraints today, so I'm happy to continue it to next month, but I want to have a meeting with the CDC and Maria before it comes back to neighborhoods, because I want to give this item more format and substance when it comes back to neighborhoods so that we can be working towards something. In addition, I would like something answered before it comes back to neighborhoods next month. I would like to know how much money this organization received until 2013 and where that money has gone from 2013 to now, so I can better understand the funding, what they were getting, and what's being done with this money now. I think that would be illuminating and helpful for the continued conversation.
Mm. Good. Okay. Everybody clear on direction? Okay. Anybody else want to put anything on the record before we continue it to next month? I appreciate everybody who called in. I know this is an important issue, and thank you, Commissioner Gongora. We will then have maybe more fine-tuned discussion and understanding of what we will be discussing next month. And with that, I'm going to go over to item number two. Since Maria is here, Maria, it's your morning, shall we say? Discussion regarding possible ways to improve the homeless issue in Miami Beach. This is an item that Commissioner Minor has on the agenda. I believe he wants it on monthly. And Commissioner Minor, do you want to tee us up?
Sure. Yeah, I think we actually switched to every other month. So that if everyone's okay with that, it's an important element. And actually, there's a new report here. And actually, when Marie, I appreciate it. It's actually a very good report. I believe this is new. I'm curious. There's some numbers in here that are, and I'd like to know how do we collect this data? For example, it mentions that 39% of the homeless population in Miami Beach has been arrested for violent crime at some point. And there's a lot of other data that's really interesting. I'm just curious how we collect that.
Certainly, Commissioner Minor. The data that you're reflecting is an analysis of all of the homeless persons who received relocation assistance by the city. And we've been averaging well over our actual daily population in relocations annually for the past several years. We, unlike other jurisdictions, actually conduct a criminal national background check of all persons who are served to see if they have any open warrants or any concerns that we should have before we place them into shelter or perhaps put them on a bus to send them somewhere. So the data comes from the actual national criminal background checks for those individuals that the city provided relocation to.
Thank you. So I don't see any other hands. Let me see if there's anybody from the public now that this is working again. I don't. So essentially what I, you know, Commissioner Minor, so we're going to see this bi-monthly. Every other month. My question is, do you want to give for the next time this appears on our agenda, some direction on what it is you want to maybe like a specific issue regarding, instead of just a general homeless discussion, do you want to think about what you want to address next time? Like Commissioner Gongora, when he has his crime updates, now he's going more, let's discuss this next month or this specific issue. And sometimes we do want a generalized discussion, but think about that, because then we can really tackle some interesting things like maybe area specific or action specific. You know, think about it.
No, I think that's a great suggestion. I've actually been putting something together, and I can certainly be in touch with our with Marie and our police homeless outreach team. It's an issue that we all know. It was a top five issue when we did our city survey. It's something we hear about consistently. And I'm happy to do that. And we'll have a good direction next time. We'll talk about this in March.
Great. And Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up. And I just want to let the public know, we do normally have a crime update that is also every other month. And I guess that will be coming next month. And what specifically, because I did have an inquiry and I do see our chief on, not to get into that, what specifically are we going to be discussing next month regarding the crime update? And then, of course, please, whatever comments you have regarding the homeless item.
Sure. With regard to the crime update, I defer to the chief. I know we gave direction in December, but I don't recall. So maybe he can eliminate us on that point. With regard to the homeless, I just wanted to give a shout out to those people watching that the city does have a homeless committee. My appointee had been the longtime chair of that committee, Valerie Navarette. She recently moved committees to the police committee. So I have an opening, and I'm looking for somebody who is passionate about homeless issues and improving our city. So if you are one of those people and you have an interest in really getting to work on the homeless issue in our city, please reach out to me. I have a board appointment available.
Oh, I like that. All right, Commissioner Samuelin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am just going to make a special request that I am going to put this forward to the commission. I think it would be very productive if at one of the upcoming crime discussions, we focus on crime technology, lighting, cameras. I think that would be very valuable. And I will be bringing that forward as a referral to this body. On homeless, a couple specifics. First, a question for the administration. Is there a prohibition of individuals occupying the right of way, for example, being sprawled out on a sidewalk? Is that allowed or prohibited?
Who is that directed to?
Let's see, Maria, either you or someone from the city attorney's office, whoever can, or PD, whoever can help.
I was going to expect Alex to jump in. There have been cases in the court that have said people have the right to sit on sidewalks and lay on sidewalks as long as they don't impede the right of way.
Okay, so if they are, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's very fact specific. So it really kind of depends on what the person's doing. If they're spread across the sidewalk, where the individuals who are using the sidewalk are required to step off the sidewalk, then that creates an issue, and an enforcement action can be taken there. So it's going to be really fact specific on what is happening and the conduct that they're doing.
Okay, thank you for that. And so to be specific about it, we received an email from a resident about a gentleman who was appeared homeless, who's sort of spending quite a bit of time on 15th and Collins. This email came in just yesterday, and I believe the chief had indicated would be following up and addressing it. And I would just say anecdotally, I personally have seen this individual taking parts of the sidewalk so one would have to step aside. And so I'm just wondering if we've had follow-up since the resident email that literally came in. Again, it's 15th and Ocean.
Yes. Yes, Commissioner, I did refer it immediately to our homeless outreach team. Whenever we get this information, it would be great. And I think it was one of our Civi Safe residents that actually called it in. Let us know about it. You know, our homeless outreach team is incredibly responsive. They'll go out immediately. If there's a referral to be made, they'll contact Maria's crew, and we'll come out and we'll do it. But, you know, again, we did address it yesterday, to the best of my knowledge, and we were going to be dealing with it again to make sure that there wasn't a reoccurring issue. Now, that being said, he does frequent the area. He will sit on the sidewalk, and we do our best in order to be able to ensure that he's not impeding the sidewalk to where it becomes an access issue.
Okay, thank you for that, Chief. And again, I would just sort of underline what you just said, because I've seen it, that this particular individual is occupying parts of the sidewalk. It's very frequent. I personally have called it in to your group as well, so I'm aware of it. Thank you for that
Thank you. I just got a notification that someone from Public Works wants to speak. Eric?
Sorry. I was mentioning that someone from the public had their hand up.
Oh, it says Public Works. You had a typo. All right. Yes, I'll definitely call on the public again. Commissioner Minor.
Do you want to call on the public first?
Let's do that. We didn't have anybody up before, but now we have a hand, so let's do it. First caller, Irene Bigger.
Oh, hi again. Thank you for letting me speak on this. Yes, I've noticed that there has been an increase in the homeless, and I understand that, you know, with the weather there's the attraction to come to our area, and I don't want to be cold about it. I've done a lot of research. I've spoken to many people, including, you know, Maria, on the matter. And I just want to bring up the point that what we need to do, if we could, is differentiate between the homeless that seek our help, because from what I've heard, you know, we have a world-class program here in Miami, and our officers do a phenomenal job. They're award-winning, from what I understand. But, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to reconcile is, you know, why do they refuse the help? And is there any way to differentiate between that and hold people accountable, you know, because it's just not right. It's not right, not only for the residents, but for their own welfare. And it just does not create a good environment. You know, we are a destination place. You know, we also have residents here, and we all want to coexist and have a good environment to live in and to enjoy. And it's very difficult to witness this on a daily basis. Thank you.
Commissioner Minor, that's closing the public hearing. We have no more hands. And by the way, my mistake, I misread what Eric sent me. All right, Commissioner Minor.
Thank you. A comment and a request. So I've seen firsthand, because I've been working with Chief Clements on addressing homelessness. And I can say firsthand that when certain complaints come in from residents about a certain area, our police department's homeless outreach team has done an incredible job. First of all, helping place services, but also handling the situation and correcting the concerns of residents. So I've seen it firsthand, and they do an absolutely fabulous job. My request would be that I think, at least what I've seen, and maybe there is a lot of proactive policing on the homelessness that I'm not seeing, but I would ask that, because I it seems that we're reacting and we accomplish it once residents reach out and make the complaints. I would ask that we be extremely proactive when police officers are walking around or driving around and they see it, that we not wait for the residents' complaints and that we handle it proactively.
Great. Anybody else have any other questions or comments? Maria, do you have anything you want to add? Next month, Commissioner Gongora.
The only thing I would add.
Sorry, Maria, please.
Okay. The only thing I would add is that the police have done these wonderful detailed LTCs regarding their initiative in the South Beach area. And there was one data set that absolutely jumped out, which is 20% of the arrests are of people who are homeless, and further, that they ask the question, well, where are you from? It's Miami, although that's an arbitrary thing. I think what really matters is that percentage, because we're seeing the exact same data set that Los Angeles has found in its population, and it's something that I think nationwide we should look at, because it's a very telling data set, and I think that, just for the record, that we should continue to monitor that.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Thank you. And for next month, Commissioner Gongora, on crime, maybe we want to touch on.
Yeah, I do think after Samuel had said it, I do think technology was the direction, because now he refreshed my recollection that we were discussing technology in December. I think there were two points, technology and one other one. Whatever they were, I just ask our clerk to send those notes or minutes to the police chief. And if the police chief could have somebody call me like you always do before the next neighborhood committee meeting, we'll fine tune the discussion.
And I was just going to make a request that, because it's literally the month before spring break, we may want to hear about that.
Oh, I think that was the second point. See, every time one of you says something, it reminds me. Yeah, that was the second point. It was technology and spring break. There you go.
Now, Chief, since you're on the call still, I'm going to jump to item number 7, which is discuss the Police Citizens Relations Committee motion regarding a community court program and arrest tracking. I'll try to get your items. I know you're busy and have to go, so I'll try to get your items all together. This is sponsored by Commissioner Gongora and co-sponsored by Commissioner Minor. Do you want to tee it up for us so we can move?
You know, I like to speak quick. Chief. All right. I'm very excited about this. And actually, the chief, I know Commissioner Minor was on as well. We were on one of the police committee meetings when our state attorney, Kathy Fernandez-Rundle, was there. And there was a little bit of discussion at that meeting about the community court program. And I know this came to us through the Police Citizens Relations Committee. And community court, the best thing about it, it doesn't require a change to state law. It's something that we can implement ourselves. Fort Lauderdale has successfully implemented their own community court with their 17th Judicial Circuit. And we would be essentially, if this gains approval today, replicating theirs by outreaching to our own 11th Judicial Circuit Chief Judge and getting them on board, because they would need to send the judge to help us, as well as applying for funding. I think the Fort Lauderdale Community Court got started with a $200,000 grant. So we would look for grant monies or else a budget enhancement request if we can't get the money from elsewhere. But for those that don't know what a community court is, essentially it takes a lot of violations of local laws, a lot of the homeless type cases we were just talking about that get arrested, and it brings them into a more kind of behavioral health court, where the judges are able to provide them with social services to not only address the punishment and the violation of the crime, but to get them the special services they need and coordinate with all those social groups to try to stop the bad criminal behavior and fix the root of the problem. And it appears to be doing well in Fort Lauderdale. It seems like a cool concept. So, police chief, take it away.
Commissioner Gregor, you teed it up great for me. You really did. I mean, that's the goal of it. We were unsure of what Fort Lauderdale's model was going to look like until we actually were exposed to it. And really, I think that the concept of a one-stop shop was what we walked away with, which is again a variety of services that were there that were provided to people, you know, that really for the most part fit this criteria. But moreover, I think what it also did was it brought back the issues to Miami Beach, and it didn't have them go over to, you know, the other side of the bay, you know, where it became problematic for the state attorney, but then also for the public defender. So from both, not only from an enforcement perspective, but then also from a humanitarian perspective, it really brings things closer to home, and it affords us the opportunity to make sure that segment's not being overlooked in either fashion. So we're excited about it. The only thing right now that's delaying it is everything for the most part on the judicial standpoint is still closed. Okay, and we're waiting for that to get off the ground. And Assistant Chief Acosta is actually spearheading this, and we've put together a memo or a plan that we submitted to our interim city manager, saying this is where we want to go. And I know that we're supposed to be meeting on that to review it, and then again to really see and look for a projected date. We really want to start to go ahead and get the ball rolling on this.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to speak on this item, Commissioner Minor?
Yes, thank you. Happy to co-sponsor with Commissioner Gongora. This is a good item. A couple of points. One, I actually, simultaneous with this, unbeknownst to the Citizens Committee and myself, I had asked, and I put an item on the December 9th commission meeting to collect arrest data. So basically my understanding is that Miami Beach Police, we arrest someone in the city. We don't have a record or comprehensive record of what the disposition of that. Are they on probation? How much jail time they got? Were they not even detained? Depending on the nature of the offense. And the way I'm reading this memo and report, the arrest data they're talking about here is just relating to the community court, the quality of life offenses. So I'm actually trying to, maybe the chief can address. I've been actually. And I mentioned this to Raul recently. I thought there was going to be a report either at the January commission meeting or this neighborhoods meeting on what our plan is to collect that data. And so far, I haven't received an update on that.
Commissioner, I apologize for that.
That's okay.
Part of what we were doing was to trying to determine. I think one of the things that you were really interested in, you said that obviously in your initial comments, was you were looking at the resolution. How did the case resolve itself? And the reality of it is that there are so many cases that are intertwined that for the most part, we're not getting notified from the entities that are over on the judicial side of this as to the outcome of these cases. And what we're trying to do is to create the avenue. So we've made an official ask, not only through day chiefs, but also through the clerk of the courts, to go ahead and to provide us with a closeout memo that goes specifically to each municipality, because I think it's advantageous for every police chief to know, you know, the status of these cases and how they are moving forward upon the conclusion of the case. I think it's fair. I think it's easy to do in terms of generating it from a technology standpoint. And it's just as simple as a closeout with a disposition on how it was closed out. But really, for the most part, to track it every day once the system is up and running is cumbersome and really, for the most part, require a lot of additional resources. So we're just trying to cut out the tough part of it, which is you know, tracking part of it, and then as soon as it's entered in the system and it's closed out, it will let us know immediately it's the disposition of the case. Some of these cases can drag on for years. I mean, if it's, for example, if it's an aggravated crime, it can literally drag on for 1 or 2 years, you know, without us really knowing what's going on. And at the end, there could be, you know, either a plea agreement or there could be, you know, a sentencing and so forth and so on that might not necessarily require the officer to even go to court in that particular instance. It's just something that the state and the public defender works out. So we're just trying to provide a better venue, you know, to be able to get the information that you're looking for.
Any other questions?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I guess and we had spoken about that, Chief, and I like your idea. I think it's a good one. And if the state will provide that, great. My understanding is that the state currently does, the county does not currently provide that information to any of the 34 cities. So we're asking them to do something new, and we don't know yet whether they'll actually do it. I agree with you. That's probably the best way to go. But until they give us the nod that they're going to do it, we have to assume that's not going to happen. One suggestion would be, because most of this information is publicly available in databases. You just know have to know how to do it. You know, the civilian volunteer patrol that I had initiated and this commission unanimously passed, you know, there are individuals, so that is going to have people on the street, but there's also a couple of individuals who, for whatever reason, don't feel that physically they could handle the rigor of being out and walking on the street, have told me they'd volunteer for any back office. This might be a perfect example, because I understand in talking with you, you don't want to utilize any of your police resources to consistently pull this data. And I get that. And I'm agreeing with you, but this might be a perfect avenue for a volunteer to actually, and I think we have plenty of volunteers for this, to be able to pull from a public database. They just need to be trained how to do it.
Commissioner, it's a great idea. Again, this is the first that you and I have spoken about that. I think it's a very good idea. It's a good utilization of resources, and it doesn't take away from, you know, from anybody that we have on the street, you know, being able to go out there and obviously do what they're supposed to be doing. So I'd love to be able to talk to you on this on the sidebar. I think it's a great opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I can follow up with those individuals and provide you the contact info. That'd be great. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioner. No, I don't want to cut you off. Continue, please.
Nope. I had a few more things, but Commissioner Salmon, did you want to comment on this? Okay. So, and follow up, and Commissioner Gongora mentioned that, yeah, the Police Citizens Committee had Miami State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rendell, and it was actually very, very interesting. And Commissioner Gongora and I were both on that call. One of the things she mentioned that I'd like to see implemented is the concern is that a lot of our quality of life offenses are not being properly prosecuted by the prosecutors and then by the judges, and they're not quite taken as seriously. And we've seen when there is citizen engagement, John Deutzman's group and Jeff Poe's, when they've gone out there, they've made tremendous strides, but it's asking a lot for one or two individuals to do. So one of the Ms. Rendell's, one of her suggestions was that we have sort of a rotation of residents who can actually call into these sentencing hearings. It's especially easier now that they're all being done on Zoom, and can actually give public comment and about how important it is, these quality of life offenses, to give a face to the prosecutors and the judges. I guess organizing that is the question. And I know there are representatives from So Be Safe on the call and others, but I'd like to see a way that maybe the city can help facilitate that, to get our residents and have that kind of rotation, how we can get that information out, that our residents can call in and show the importance of handling these quality of life offenses appropriately. One last comment. I had also brought an item that's a little bit of a heavy lift, but whether we could have municipal courts in Miami Beach, where you'd have elected judges by the residents of Miami Beach, sort of like the commissioners are elected. It is a heavy lift because it would require a Florida state constitutional amendment. So I purposely did not put this on our legislative priorities, which we actually approved yesterday at our commission meeting, because there is an expense involved when you put out a legislative priority with lobbyists and what have you. So I didn't want to do that, but it's something I still would like to explore. And I think I am been reaching out, and I will be reaching out to individuals how we can do that and potentially sort of do our own resident based lobbying and see if any other municipalities would be interested in joining us to try to see if there's any movement within the state to have Miami Beach judges. We used to have it in the early 70s, but state law now prohibits it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Samuel.
Yep. Just very briefly, I want to weigh in with my support. You all are doing great work here. Community court sounds right. quality of life issues are top of mind for our residents. The data guy likes his data, so that's a great initiative as well. And finally, using technology such as Zoom to allow our residents, as Commissioner Minor just described, to weigh in sounds brilliant. And So Be Safe, a fine organization having real impact, is probably a good starting point. So I just wanted to underline my support for the direction my colleagues are leading us. Thank you.
Great. That sounds great. We're about to pass this. Commissioner Gongora. We can't hear you. Your audio isn't working. Since we can't hear you, what I'm going to do is go to the public for a moment, see who's there. Irene, you have the floor, 2 minutes.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. First of all, I just want to say I'm so thrilled and excited about the prospect of having a community court here. And I do want to thank Chief Clements, the Police and Citizens Relations Committee for their work on this, and Commissioners Minor and Gongora for sponsoring it. It's just great. I think it'll go a long way in helping the community with the problems of misdemeanor crimes and habitual offenders that we have here and have been plaguing our community. And tracking the information is also very important. And I would just ask to please include the judges and how they ruled, like the sentencing in these cases. That's also very important information. And with respect to the bond hearings, I actually have recruited somebody to help us coordinate So Be Safe volunteers to appear at these bond hearings. So we are working on that. And with respect to State Attorney Rundle, she's incredible. We've had a meeting with her as well. And she's very creative and forward thinking with many aspects of how to help, our community. So I want to thank her publicly as well. And again, thank you all.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. Now we're back on the virtual dais. Commissioner Gongora, can we hear you? Let's see.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yay. Okay. All right. Just to bring it home, I'd like to move the idea of the community court forward for administration to recommend the meeting with the Chief Judge Soto of the 11th Judicial Circuit. If all right with my committee members, I'd like to attend that meeting as well. I'd like to instruct administration to pursue grant monies for a community court and to report back within 60 days on that. And also, finally, for them to work to create some kind of tracking of arrest, as Commissioner Minor suggested, and also report back to this committee on those advances.
All right.
I'll second that motion. And I'd love to join you at that meeting as well.
Then let's do it. They just have to notice it as a public meeting since we'll both be there, but that would be fine.
Okay. So it is done unanimously. Thank you so much. We're going to move on. Chief, are there any other items on this agenda that you need to speak on before I move on?
I don't think so. I'll be monitoring it. So if there's anything that comes up here, to obviously go ahead and...
All right. So I'm going to move on to something a little lighter. Construction site decor. No. item number 3, which is actually my item. And I don't know why the memo didn't make it on from the commission meeting, but just so everybody's aware, I've gotten complaints and I've seen it, and we've all seen it when we're driving down. There are all these construction projects throughout the city, and some of them are private construction and some of them are our own, whether it's geobond or some other capital improvements that have been improved and so forth. And a lot of times it's just, surrounded by a fence with just a green, sometimes not necessarily in the best condition, and it doesn't look really well. And sometimes it causes more, exasperates the situation in the neighborhood because it doesn't look as well. And I wanted to run the idea by you all to see if there's an appetite first. And then once I know there's an appetite, we can take it further. But to have something where on our public construction sites, we have some pre-approved wrapping that we could maybe commission, where we could either have the image of exactly what it is that is going to be there, so residents and visitors know this is a construction area, but this is what it's going to look like after, or something, a generic Miami Beach looking wrap, or even a PSA if it's our public construction zones. Maybe a PSA we want to put out there. Separately, on the private construction, I think we should also have them maybe choose from a list of pre-approved certain images or Miami Beach-esque decor around, or alternatively, their own, whatever they're looking to build on that construction site that has been approved, an image of that, you know, so that people see what's coming. So I wanted to know if there's an appetite. David Martinez can go a little bit more into detail, but first and foremost, if there's an appetite, then I'll take it to the next level.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So, David, how do you propose our next steps should be?
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Let me try to summarize it into how I see it. I see 5 points that need to be addressed. One, of course, is cost, obviously. Number two is, if we do proceed, when the time comes to replace a damaged or worn screen, do we include the graphics again? Number three is, what is it that the city allows? The planning department, what will they allow to be installed on a fence? Number four would be the actual graphics that would go on there, as you had mentioned. Is it a logo? Is it a renderings combination or something like that? And the last one would be, who would make the decision as to what goes on the fence fabric? So let me address very quickly, if I may, just the cost component, so we can at least put that one in perspective. A typical construction fence is typically rented. However, the fabric is a throwaway that can't be reused. So you rent the actual fence for typically in 1 year increments, depending on the project. You pay up front for the fabric. A typical green fabric costs about $2.50 a linear foot. So that is going to be a fixed number on any project. The graphics is charged to print it on a square foot price. And it just happens that it's $2.50 a square foot. So I can give you some examples to put it in perspective. Let's take, I looked at three or four of our projects that you may be familiar with. The smallest ones I looked at would be, for example, Maurice Gift Park. If we were to go construct that, we would install a fence, except for the side that's on the water, because obviously there's no visibility there. It's about 1,000 linear feet. So the cost of the fabric alone is about $2,500. If you go to the extreme and print on 100% of the fabric, that goes up to $17,500. And then obviously any fraction in between is proportional. So like, for example, if you do 25% of the fabric, it's $6,250, $10,000 if you do 50%. So that's one example. If you take it to, say, a much larger project, such as Bayshore Park, for example, excluding the fence line along the high school and the public works yard and all that, because it's not really visible. That there, we would just go with a standard screen or not. You're looking at about $9,000 for the standard green fabric, all the way up to as much as $63,000 if you were to print 100% of the fabric. So that's kind of just to put it in perspective, and it can be any iteration in between.
Right. So can I just ask a question, a follow-up real quick on that?
Sure.
So no, I hear you on that. I don't see us ever printing 100% of anything. I just don't see that being the reality. I guess my question is so right now today, a project like that large Bayshore area, that would be $9,000 today without anything else.
That is strictly the fabric on the fence. It does not include the rental for the fence itself, but it's just the fabric that must go on the fence.
Right, because we must have a fabric. So for $2.50 per linear, we would, depending on how busy we want it to be, or what image we want there, which again, I don't see us ever doing 100%, could be anywhere from $9,050 to upwards of $50,000.
Right. And like I said, in Bayshore Park for like, say, 20, if you just did like 25% coverage, right, quarter of it in some form or another, it's just a number, you're looking at an adder of $13,500 to the normal green tax, if you want to summarize it that way, for 25% coverage.
And then, you know, okay, that, no, this is good. That's why I wanted to flush it out here at committee and just have an understanding, because, you know, if it's not feasible, it's not feasible, but it might be depending on what we do and how we structure it. So what your next point was the damage of screen and.
Right. So obviously these things, they go through a good beating. If you have a law, if you have a project such as, again, we'll continue to talk about Bayshore Park, right? It's going to be at least a 2-year project. So chances are, between windstorms and just wear and tear, that fabric is going to start looking pretty bad at some point in time. So then the question becomes, okay, so if you invested in additional whatever in providing graphics, do you do it again when you have to restore it, you know, the second time? So again, it's just a, you know, a policy thing, but it's just a thought. And then third, obviously, is what does the city code allow for that type of thing? And do any changes have to be made to any type of regulation or anything?
Yeah. You know? Okay. No, I mean, I think the only, when I had spoken to Tom, essentially, you know, we want to be careful not to be advertising, right? That's the one issue, but no, but I think we can wrap and I don't know that there would be, we'll verify that. And then the final thing I wanted to say is, and what I want to tell my colleagues is, you know, this has come to my attention from different residents because it's a quality of life. They're living with the construction and then they have, it's a sore spot for many, but I don't think it should be carte blanche for everybody. And not all projects are the same. So I think they need to be a certain length of time for this to almost trigger that potential. And I think it needs to be, and I don't know that I at first blush think that if there was an opportunity, if it did get damaged, that we would replace it with the higher cost. I don't know. But once it's printed and once the image is there, I think those costs would be down. For instance, we have a vacant store policy right now where if you have a vacant storefront, you have to have a specific covering. And we even had a contest of students and they designed different wraps for these windows. And so it's like, these are the approved palettes and you can pick 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. They were pre-approved and it's up to the person who's doing the project or owns that storefront to make that determination. We don't impose which one, we just give you a variation. And it really does add something to the area instead of just the normal run-of-the-mill vacancy-looking storefront. So taking that concept and bringing it to these construction sites, I think would go a long way. Of course, we need to make sure always that we're being feasible and not just throwing out money, but this should be an enhancement because it's a lot of pain a lot of times, especially like when we have the stormwater projects, there's a lot going on. Not everything is going to have a wrap because not everything would make sense to have that. So let me work with you on this and bring something back to neighborhoods where we flesh out more. This was just more of a, let me see if there's even a will to go down this path to even explore further. Commissioner Minor, your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. No, thank you for bringing this item, Chair. I think it, I agree. I'd like to explore this further. So you have my support. I guess a question for David, you mentioned on this, the fabric clearly would not be reusable. I guess the question is on the fences, are those reusable? Because you mentioned that we would rent those. And I wonder if it's feasible or make more economic sense to buy fencing if it is reusable.
It, Commissioner, that's a great question. And what I would say is this is very, very typical in the industry. Construction fencing is only like, I know it sounds like it's a repeat, but it happens to be that it's also between $2 and $3 a linear foot for renting for a year. So it's not a great number. And what happens is with all these projects, where do we store this? You know, if you have a project that's a different size, you get to add to it. So it's just in the industry is not very typical for anyone to purchase these fences. These fence companies do this all the time, and they can do it a lot cheaper than us trying to store the equipment or the material. And you know, it gets damaged. So what happens is the the company that rents it, the fence company, they'll remove it. They have to take it back to their shop. They have to straighten out posts. They have to, obviously it goes through a lot of wear and tear. So it doesn't, I don't think it, from the perspective of us owning it, I don't think it's something that's very feasible.
Okay. Thank you.
My opinion.
It sounds like you've thought about it. So that's helpful. Thanks.
And one other thing, Madam Chair, that I may add, just to, again, so that it doesn't impact construction. Remember, all of these things have to be on a particular project, have to be flushed out well in advance. Because remember, the very first thing that's going to happen when the contractor mobilizes, he's got to put up that fence. So if we award a project, get into construction, and then this thing is up in the air, and we're trying to figure out what to do, then
I would never. This is fully prospective. Nothing, when we do these things, we have to be prospective because we already have commitments made. Pricing has already been figured into things, including, I'm sure, just the fence itself. So, this is prospective for anything that has not yet, is not shovel ready by any means. This is moving forward how we want to see construction projects evolve in our city. There's going to be a lot more over the next, 10 years with the geo bond and everything else that's going to be out there. I just thought it would be something that we could look into. And you and I will then talk sidebar offline on that. So we can bring something. And if it's not ready for next month, we'll bring it the month after. But I'd like to pursue this and see what we can do, being reasonable, of course.
Sure. Perfect. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm going to move on to the next item, which is public meetings. Item number 4. Who would like to present? Commissioner Minor, you want to tee us up?
Sure. I guess twofold. This item is referring to, I think, the city administration, the city manager meeting with homeowners associations. There's also a separate item that I don't know if we're prepared to talk about today that I had brought about having sort of regular updates for our different parts of the city. So breaking it up into sort of South, Mid, and North Beach to have potentially, and we've spoken about this, and I've spoken to Kevin Polito about it, and it would be a way of, so I think the homeowners associations are obviously very involved and they're up to date, but I think sometimes the average resident who is not as active and participating on these meetings and calls and with the homeowners associations, it might be a way that we can advertise that the city is going to provide some information for let's say South Beach, and would be a good news. I don't think that's the item on today, but I wanted to tee that up as well, that it's working through the system.
Great. Kevin.
Hi, good morning. Kevin Polito, Neighborhood Affairs Division. And I believe Tanya's on as well. So I just wanted to, for the updates, we can send out a general update. We do work with our neighborhood associations. We've been working very closely with some of them, SOFNA specifically, with sending them ways to stay connected. I know Mr. Delvecchio has been sending me quite a number of residents who are just looking for general information on certain items. So we do send over the different ways to stay connected. We have our engagement toolbox. We have had different meetings with each of the areas throughout the city where we've promoted the Neighborhood Affairs Division page as well as the engagement toolbox. So, while you're in those town hall meetings, you might not have a question at the tip of your tongue. But after the meeting, we want residents to know where to go to get that information. We want them to be able to reach out to us if they have questions. So following this, we could go ahead and maybe send a general email similar to what we've been announcing at each of the town halls that you stated. We'll go ahead and send something out that kind of refresher of sorts for people to go to the engagement toolbox, go to the different resources that are online so they could sign up. We also have our MB Resident Connect, which I think you alluded to, and also with the Residents' Right to Know. Those are the keyword email searches. Whenever there's an item, whether it's through the keyword for palm trees or 41st Street, they will get an email with the item, the agenda information for that meeting. It's very helpful. We've had a few residents reach out. Maybe sometimes they'll get the item, so they just want to confirm when the meeting date is, and they'll confirm it through our, us and our staff. So I believe that's something, you know, fairly easy that we could do it, and just quick refresher.
Thanks, Kevin. Commissioner, if you don't mind, I'd like to add a couple things.
Yes,
so
please.
I just want to point out kind of how active the new Neighborhood Affairs Division really is with our community, and how they're already out there a lot talking to all of our residents in various ways. As Kevin mentioned, we do have the resident toolbox to stay connected with us in every way possible to stay connected with us. We have MB Resident Connect, and we have the Resident Right to Know. Those are both ways for residents to actively sign up to get information on their own. Plus, with the creation of the Neighborhood Affairs Division, we have a North Beach, Middle Beach, and South Beach representative that attends all of the HOA meetings, regularly talks to residents, is there for project information, and is actively reaching out in those neighborhoods already. So I just want to, also talk a little bit about what they're already doing and how active they already are. And reminder, this team was only created at the beginning of 2020. And I think they've done a tremendous job staying connected and reaching out and getting active and getting more people to be connected with our city and learn about the things that we're doing. They also created the Neighborhood Affairs portal, where you can go on and get all kinds of project information. Plus, there's various ways while you're on there to reach out and contact the team to get information. So I think there has been a drastic increase in resident communications and reaching out to them and making sure all of our residents stay involved. And I think that that's just going to continue. So, I just wanted to, make sure we talked about all of that and point out how amazing the Neighborhood Affairs Division really is doing.
Thank you. Commissioner Minor?
Yeah, no, I'll echo what Tanya said and Kevin. There's been a lot of work done on this, so thank you for that. I guess where are we at? Because I don't remember if we discussed it at the neighborhoods meeting. I know we've had some conversations offline about having, whether it's twice a year, I think you even suggested that quarterly would be even best, to have sort of a town hall, maybe an hour long town hall, split up amongst the South Mid and North Beach.
Well, I can tell you the mayor is actually doing that right now. And we're actually sitting in on his town halls, and we're there making sure that the neighborhoods team is introduced to everybody. So, and whenever you guys have meetings, I know our team sits in on those as well. The city manager was having meetings with the HOAs. Obviously, that's been put on a little bit of a hold, but we're going to absolutely look forward to those being reinstated once the new city manager is involved, or if the interim city manager would like to start those up, we're absolutely happy to do those now. So I don't remember exactly the details of the town hall. I believe that was the next item, and I think we had talked about it. We were going to come back for just verbal updates. We had talked about making sure that we're keeping people informed on the communications projects in their area. We did actually, for the first time in this last MB magazine that went out, we were able to put all of the construction projects that are currently in progress and or will get shovel in ground in that magazine, which, you, as you probably remember, is the number one tool that our residents use to get information on the city. So it was important for us to make sure that that was included in there. So again, the town halls with the city manager, again, have been on hold a little bit, but obviously we look forward to those continuing.
And just to be clear, and I appreciate you mentioning the town halls and the homeowners association and the mayor's participation, but my understanding is those are specific to homeowners associations, which do a fabulous job. But I guess we had some discussions about also having it, which clearly homeowners associations and neighborhood associations would be involved, but it wouldn't be specific to that. Like, let's say Flamingo Park or West Avenue, it would be literally just a standalone North Beach town hall and just whatever it is, twice a year or quarterly, and giving updates on various various issues and projects and updates. We had that discussion. I brought the item actually. I just was curious where we're at with that. if you don't have an answer right now, that's fine too. We can discuss it. I could put it on for the next neighborhoods meeting.
Thanks, Commissioner. I honestly don't remember direct discussion about starting those. I remember talking about the various ways that we are connecting with the community. I think that, you know, possibly doing one, you know, at the beginning of the year, as we start our new fiscal year, to tell the residents about all of the things that are coming up, would be probably a great idea.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Commissioner Gongora.
Thanks. Now, I just had a thought while I was listening to all of this. You know, this commission is very independent. Like, a lot of members of the commission do our own things, do our own Zooms, Mondays with Mickey, Zoom with the vice mayor, whatever I used to do, walk with Michael. They're all over the place. But when I was on the commission before, we had a real organized kind of outreach, which we all kind of did together. I don't know if this commission would want to do such a thing. I don't even know how it works in the age of Zoom, but they used to call it Mayor on the Move. That's what it used to be from 2009 to 2013. And essentially the mayor and all the commissioners that wished to go, we would go every month to a different neighborhood association, SOFNA, WAVNA, Mid Beach, whatever. We went to all of them and we'd take government to them. And the bulk of the commission would participate, not everybody, but we'd all go out and we'd all speak and kind of take government to different groups at different times. Has there ever been any thought of doing something like that?
Not that I'm aware of, Commissioner, but, you know, it's a discussion to be had.
Okay. Instead of like everybody just engaging in their own individual things, it was just kind of a more organized activity to take the commission as in whole to the neighborhood groups and present to them. I'd be open to it. I'm fine if everybody wants to keep on doing their own things too. It just might be one way to take all of us to them at one time rather than everybody doing different activities. You know, like I'm speaking at Flamingo Park neighborhood Monday night, but I don't need to do it by myself. I'd be happy if my colleagues wanted to come. So I don't know. There might be some way to organize these so that we can all go out together.
And Commissioner, I can't tell you one thing that we do with the West Avenue organization specifically. Once a year, we organize a neighborhood walk. And what we've done is we've invited the different city departments, operations, sanitation, code compliance, police. We'll go out and we'll speak with our constituents that are in the field. Last time we did it, I think, was around the start of COVID. So we did it outside. We were at the street end and we were able to talk at the Lincoln Road street end, and we were able to meet with sanitation, code compliance, police, go over the project that was coming in that area. So that's a little bit different because it was internal city departments, but we could definitely, like Tanya mentioned, we could definitely explore if we're going to do like a commission driven one, you know, we could explore how to have you all there and advertise it appropriately.
What I was going to do. Sorry, Tanya, go.
Sorry. I think that it seems like the bigger conversation about the possible mayor and the move, that would be a conversation, I think, for the full body to see, you know, if everybody wanted to do that or you know, I guess, however we wanted to start that conversation.
Okay. Perhaps we have a retreat coming up in the spring, don't we? I think we do. If I'm not mistaken, I think they're shooting for a spring retreat. Maybe we could just take that issue of some kind of unified commission outreach and add it as a retreat item.
Looks like the chair may be frozen.
Yeah, she's frozen.
But am I having technical difficulties?
We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
We can't see you.
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear back. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, it's not... You all are frozen on my screen, so I just assume it's all of you. No, I was going to say the two aren't mutually... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. If, you know, if the commission wants to do something as a body, I think that's great. Like, for instance, residents love that I do what I do because it's not a general topic town hall. It's topic specific. I partner with the school board. I partner with the county. I partner with the police. I partner. They're topic specifics. We once did one, Commissioner, and I invite all my colleagues to participate. Commissioner Gore, you did one with me. Commissioner Minor has done one with me. And they're publicly noticed because I want everybody to come and not have to worry about sunshine. But it's just they're mostly topic specific. They don't always address the general concerns per se. And sometimes we have done that. So I would love to see, you know, us, the more communication that we all do as a body, individually and together, I think is important. We all have our newsletters. We all like to send those out. We don't have just one formal newsletter from the city. You know, so I love that we have all this because to me, it's about being accessible individually and collectively. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think we can all do, you know, if our schedules permit it, we should do as much as we can to outreach to the public. And, you know, there are topics that are also very specific to different areas, different concerns to different areas. And then within those areas, sometimes you see that there's also different concerns that some people share and then some people don't. Some people like to talk about the actual agenda in front of us and what's coming up. So it's very good. And I guess I have one question. Since you brought it up, the residents' right to know, when we have that on our agenda and we have to click either it's a res, I'm confused because on the one hand, residents' right to know, I think everything is a residents' right to know, but then the code actually doesn't, like my discussion on fences wouldn't qualify under residents' right to know. Neither would the homeless discussion that we had today wouldn't actually technically qualify under residents' right to know, yet we all click residents' right to know. Per the code, it's something different. I don't know how we address that.
So, there you go.
I was just going to say that I think that's why we have multiple means of getting the information out and why we have the Resident Connect for all of those items that may not fall within the specifics of the resident right to know ordinance.
That's correct, Eric. I think the MB Resident Connect, it's a keyword search. So you can type in parks and you're going to get a notice every time there's a mention about parks and on an agenda item. Whereas the residents right to know is area specific. So it's information on North Beach, Middle Beach, or South Beach, whichever you sign up for, that, as you said, falls underneath the parameters of the ordinance.
Okay. Well, I may need clarification on that because, for instance, for a while we weren't putting some of them because my aide had said this doesn't fall under it. It's only if you're amending a code. Most of our discussions are not code amendments. So that's what triggers a resident's right to know. So if we're going to put every, you know, because based on what you just said, I agree completely. So we may have to figure that out. But because I don't want the public to think we're not clicking, yes, it's a resident's right to know issue, because everything is a resident's right to know. Right. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mark, your hand's up and you've been patient.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with your comment that we can keep doing a lot of things we do individually, but maybe build on some of these ideas. I just had a tactical suggestion because, you know, I love all this stuff about engaging the community, and our community has endless, you know, sort of desire and thirst to hear, or at least certain people want to hear a lot about this. You know, if you take Commissioner Miner's idea about these town halls and Commissioner Gongora's idea of having all of us or all of us that want to participate, you know, you might bundle that a little bit and start off with a, you know, mid-beach town hall with the entire commission. I mean, that might. So I like both ideas, and it wouldn't be too hard to just say, let's just do one. We'll get a date and we'll pick a part of town. I said mid-beach. It could be North Beach or South Beach. And, you know, it would be an opportunity for all the residents in that area to talk with the majority or maybe even all of the body. I think it'd be fun and we could just try one.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, don't forget, the clerk literally advertises every meeting, PTA meetings, homeowner association meetings, to give us the ability to all be there so that we're not violating any sort of sunshine. And so I love that he does that. And that's just another layer and opportunity, because all of these different organizations and groups, even that are not homeowner association, just organizations, the clerk absolutely advertises all of them so that we all can participate there too. But I'm down for that commission meeting in South, Mid, or North. I think it's a great idea. Like I said, we're local government. We're the closest to the people. I think we do a lot in terms of communication, but you know, the more accessible we are, the better. So great job, Tanya and Kevin. Thank you. But this court tale, this kind of took care a little bit and touched a little bit on the next item, which is item number 5, is it?
Yeah, 5.
Okay, so since you both are there, Commissioner Minor, with item number 5, is there anything else you'd like to add before we... And by the way, what would you like us to see so we can conclude and either make a recommendation to the full body or, you know, maybe have an LTC on what communications are being done, whatever you see us...
Yeah, I actually think an LTC is a good suggestion. And there has been, I actually like Commissioner Gongora and Commissioner Samuelin's suggestion, maybe combining all of these ideas. That's why it's so helpful to put these on the agenda and hear some good thoughts. So maybe we can sort of talk offline with Tanya and Kevin and come up with a plan for the next neighborhoods meeting. But I do like the idea of an LTC because there is so much that we're doing. And it'd be great to see in one sort of fairly short document the steps we've taken.
Okay, great. So there you have it. Thank you so much. Is there anything you need from us, Tanya, at this time?
Nope, I don't think so. We will work on an LTC, absolutely.
All right. Sounds great. Number 6. Did we do number 6 yet? We did. We did that second today. All right, yes. Moving on to item number 9. Harvey Milk co-naming street designation.
And
who would like to present, speak, talk?
I think Jose from Transportation is here. He can join us.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair. Committee members, Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. This item is sponsored by Commissioner David Richardson. It was deferred last month. And so we prepared a memo that basically delineates the process that would need to be followed in order to consider this co-naming request. The request specifically is to co-name 18th Street between Lenox Avenue and Collins Avenue as Supervisor Harvey Milk Street. So in essence, what we do with these types of requests is that we work very closely with legal and we review the code. Our city code is very specific in terms of criteria for co-naming requests. So we looked at this specific request and found that it does not meet any of the current criteria. And there are only about five or six criteria in the city code. So what we've done in the past for similar situations is that the code, in essence, would need to be amended to include criteria that would allow this co-naming request to be considered. So that's really the next step in this process. And the decision that's before you today is whether or not to amend the code to include criteria that would allow for this co-naming request. And then from that point on, the process continues. Obviously, the code amendment goes before the City Commission on 2 separate readings. It also needs to follow a public hearing. And if it's approved by the City Commission, then the co-naming request would be forwarded or transmitted to the Board of County, Miami-Dade Board of County Commissioners for consideration. And if approved by the Board of County Commissioners, then my team would work with the county to essentially implement the co-naming. And, you know, we would fabricate and install the new co-naming signs.
Hi, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get my, there we go. Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up.
Sorry, I was muted. Okay, let me start by saying how much I really like and admire Harvey Milk. When I got elected in 2006, the movie Milk came out during my tenure on the commission, and a lot of people used to like tell me that I reminded them of Milk. I, of course, think I'm much more masculine, so I don't see the comparison at all. But I think what Harvey did in the 1970s in San Francisco was amazing, and he's a personal hero. So as a first openly gay elected person in San Francisco is so historically significant. And I've done events with his nephew, Stuart Milk, for charity, and continue to stay in touch with the family and will always admire him. With that said, Harvey has very limited connectivity to the city of Miami Beach. I don't know if he does with Portland. I see they renamed something after him as well. But typically, our ordinance is kind of strict because we want to make sure that people have a very significant direct impact on our city for co-namings. I don't know what the sponsor's intent was, if it was to take that 18th Street block that adjoins Pride Park and give it LGBT significance. As I understand our current ordinance, without making any changes, and I would like to get clarification from administration, under subsection 3, we can co-name streets based on private, not-for-profit organizations with significant historic value to the city. Is that correct?
I believe so, Commissioner, but I'll defer to legal. But I am seeing that as criteria number 3, yes.
Okay. Because if it's to recognize the impact and importance of LGBT significance in our city, LGBTQ, I just wonder how the sponsor would feel if we, instead of choosing Harvey Milk, which sounds like a lot of hoops to jump through, we got to change our ordinance, we got to take many votes, we got to go to the county and get them to sign off on it, whether they would consider just renaming 18th Street. It's that one little block anyway. It's very tiny between the Convention Center and Meridian. Miami Beach Pride Way or Miami Beach Pride Boulevard or Miami Beach Pride, whatever that ends in the name of the street. As I understand the ordinance, we can do that now because Miami Beach Pride is a private, not-for-profit organization. It has direct connectivity to Miami Beach, to the Pride Park, which is next door. So it makes sense. And it highlights our own Pride organization and has that LGBTQ kind of significance. So I don't know. I was thinking that might be something to consider as an alternative. I don't know. I'm putting it out there for discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner. You had a question. What was the question for legal? I missed it because you were cutting out, but I think it was my end.
Oh, it's that I think under the current ordinance, without having to amend our ordinance and jump through so many hoops, under criteria 3, which is on page 153 of our agenda, you can re-co-name after a private, not-for-profit organization with significant historic value to the city now. It doesn't require any changes. And Miami Beach Pride hits that criteria and is something important in our city that I thought perhaps might have the same kind of LGBT significance on that little block without looking to somebody from San Francisco. Those were my thoughts.
Thank you. Commissioner Minor, your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm hesitant to amend this ordinance. I've actually been approached several times recently to have streets named after individuals who pretty much made their impact in Miami Beach. I'm sure not as famous as Harvey Milk, but and they basically, I explored it with the administration, but under our code, it wouldn't be allowed. And I think if we sort of loosen the code, we're going to be inundated with a lot of these requests because it is such a prestigious aspect. So certainly I think the code was written this way to to limit the amount of and who should be qualified. And I think it's a good code, and I kind of want to leave it the way it is without sort of making the exceptions. And as Commissioner Gregora mentioned, there really should be a close connection to Miami Beach, because then we could start, you know, there are a tremendous amount of people throughout our country who've done so many good things. And I just think we're going to start ending down an avenue that's going to create a lot of extra work for us as commissioners to handle and deal with from requests for residents, our administration. And I'm just concerned where this might lead.
Okay. Let me see if there's anybody from the public who wishes to speak. Seeing no hands. Okay. Well, it doesn't seem... You know, look, I want to commend Commissioner Richardson for putting this on here for discussion. I think it's an important discussion to have, and I think the points both of you make are very compelling as well. So by no means is this not, you know, I don't think the conversation's over per se, and then we can always find a way to honor. You know, we, over my time on the commission, there have been different requests for street namings. And, you know, it's really tough, you know, when someone passes away, they want to honor that family member or someone that they feel has been such a significant part of our community, and they come to us, and it's really a hard thing to say no to someone for wanting the street named after them, which is why I think the bar is set so high on the code. You know, it's really reserved for fallen officers killed in the line of duty, as you said, a not-for-profit organization with significant historic value, geographic areas of the city, or someone who has been established like a business in Miami Beach for more than 100 years, literally located where that business is. And, you know, that's one of the reasons, actually, that was one of the impetuses for me to create the Hall of Fame in the city of Miami Beach, where we can honor and pay homage to a lot of really great people in the community who have had such an impact without having to constantly, you know, name different streets. However, this is a different, you know, kind of particular case where I actually am intrigued and would be open to doing something. It is not it's a street that doesn't really necessarily, you know, it's not a large street, and it could have significance. So I'm open to exploring it. So I do appreciate David Richardson for bringing this forward. But I do also hear, look, we're three. Two of my colleagues have literally made really good points. It's not going to get a favorable recommendation at this time from this committee. Commissioner Gongora, Commissioner Minor, are you just Commissioner Minor, I guess, are you opposed to any naming? Because Commissioner Gongora did bring up maybe tying it into something from the LGBTQ community, just to get a sense. Do you want to think about it, come back next month, or do we want to send it? What's the next step?
Yeah, I think I'm not adverse to it. I think I'd need to learn a little more information. It's an interesting suggestion by Commissioner Gongora, but I don't have enough information as to whether we've done that historically. I'd like to learn a little more. I don't think that's encapsulated in this memo.
Okay. So what would you all like to do so that we can, do we want to, how would you like us to?
Why don't we defer it for a couple of months and have administration go back to the sponsor with the comments from this meeting, maybe ask specifically about the idea of Miami Beach Pride Way or whatever boulevard, and see if they're interested in that idea, and then bring it back to us.
Okay. Are you okay with that, Commissioner Minor?
Yes, good suggestion.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate the input, and that's great. Now, let's see. Item number 10, quality of life education motion. Unfortunately, Commissioner Samuelin just left us, but does anybody know what it is he wants? Because I know this is currently in process. This is the quality of education motion concerning placing bike racks on public rights of way to the Miami Beach Public Schools.
Jose, you've been working with QEC on this, haven't you?
Not directly with QEC, but we're aware of the motion, and we started some fact finding and did some legwork related to this item. So yes, I could definitely speak on this item.
So I guess just to cut to the chase, because we have to wrap it up. What is it exactly? that we are doing right now? And is it possible to do? Just like simply, like, can we do this? Are we doing it? Because I thought we were in process of doing it.
Sure. And we are, Madam Chair, to some extent, in preparation for this item, what we did was we reached out to the school resource officers for each of the schools in Miami Beach. We've also reached out to the principals, as well as the BTSA president for each of the school. As I mentioned before, to just get a better understanding of what the needs are for each school. Each school is very unique. It has different travel patterns, pickup, drop off, that sort of thing. So we really need to look at each school on a case by case. We need to look at the areas surrounding the school to see if there's any way of accommodating bike racks in a safe and convenient manner. And then we also want to conduct some on-site assessments at the school, to school grounds, in other words, to see if there are any opportunities within the school property to to partner with the schools and install some bike racks on their properties. So it's just some of the legwork. It will take some level of effort in terms of staff time and resources to do this. So usually what we like to do is we like to get, a favorable recommendation from this body and ratification from the commission before we go out and invest a lot of time and effort on these things. But I will say that this is part and parcel of what we do on a daily basis. One of the key things we do is install bike racks throughout the city. And as a matter of fact, we've already installed a few around one of the schools. We saw that there was an opportunity and we went ahead and moved forward with it. But some schools may require a little more, time and just coordination with the school and trying to think through what would be the best solution depending on their needs.
Excellent. All right. I think we can move this by acclamation. What do you all think? Okay, that's great. Eric, do we have any other items on the agenda?
No, we do not. That concludes.
Are you getting tired of us?
What?
You're getting tired of us.
Who would suggest that? No. I just, we have a lot, many of us have a big day ahead of us still. And so I just want to thank everybody for their participation today. I really think we had some really great discussions, some really great outcomes. I'm excited to see what's to come. And meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.